Time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott is here. Mary Jo Foley has the week off. She's in Japan. Lucky girl. But Brad Sams, Paul's colleague and Mary Jo's colleague at Thurrott.com, will be joining us as we talk about the latest news from Microsoft, that big hardware event they had yesterday in Shanghai, the new Surface Pro. We'll break it all down for you, where it's a good deal, where it's not. We'll talk about the new Windows, what do they call it, the Creative Edition. Weird fact, 18%, that's all, of all Windows 10 users have had the upgrade. We'll find out why. Whole lot more coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 519, recorded Wednesday, May 24th, 2017. It's Brad's fault. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Upside, the smart new way to save big money on business travel. Visit Upside.com and enter the code Windows, and you're guaranteed at least a $100 gift card when you book your first trip. And by WordPress. WordPress powers 27% of all websites, including mine. Get 15% off your new website at WordPress.com/Windows. That's WordPress.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. Mary Jo Foley is traveling. She's in Japan right now.
How dare her.
How dare she. Paul Thurrott's here, and he's dragged in a barely willing Brad Sams.
No one's happy about this.
The cat has been drug in. Brad, of course, nominally Paul's boss. In the same way that Paul is nominally Mary Jo's boss.
I'm not sure if the word nominally means what you think it does, but I can assure you I am not Mary Jo's boss.
Okay. Over there at Thurrott.com, Thurro.com. Brad Sams, I guess I'll send you to Thurrott.com for Brad too, right?
Yeah, you can send me anywhere.
Where would you like to be sent?
So we got Thurrott.com, then we have Petri.com, and those are kind of the two big properties. Nice. And then we're working on ITUnity.com, but don't go there yet.
That's Mary Jo's new thing.
Please,
right?
Don't ever go there.
That's going to be Mary Jo's place.
She'll be hanging out there quite a bit.
The group is all, the gang is all together. It's awesome.
It's like a little rascal.
Solving mysteries.
That's right. Is that Scooby-Doo or the Hardy Boys? Yeah. I'm not sure.
We're going to get in the Scooby van and we're going to solve it.
And which of you is, was it Shaggy?
We're not going to get down there, but.
That's a rabbit hole if I've ever heard one.
So yesterday in Shanghai, really actually the day before our time, mm-hmm. Microsoft had a hardware event. Why Shanghai, just out of curiosity? What's the deal?
Yeah, I mean, a few reasons. I mean, it was a global launch for the product. China's super important to them. There's a new version of Windows 10 for China. China. I would say.
But you
I think
know,
there was I also mean, an internal joke at Microsoft to see how many people they could get to fly all around the world, because they got us to go to New York for the education event, Seattle for Build, and they said, you know what, let's see if we can get these fools to China.
Right.
And so they tried.
As I noted on Twitter, the best time to have launched a new version of Windows for China was 20 years ago, but the second best time is today.
There is, in fact, a new build of Windows for China, is there not?
Yeah, well, for the Chinese government, yeah.
Oh, for the government. Yeah. Government. But we won't get to that right now. Let's talk about the laptops. Did EvLeaks get it right?
He got it straight from the source, is what it looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, he always.
That was a tough one because we had been briefed ahead of time about this product, and he leaked the exact documents we already had. So what are you going to do?
So in other words, somebody spilled the beans.
Yeah. Yep, and they didn't spill them to me, and I'm upset about that.
What would the ethics be if you received over the transom mm-hmm. materials that you already had?
Well, it depends on what publication you are, Leo. In my case, I would have ignored them. But if I wrote for, say, well, maybe I shouldn't say.
Don't name names, but I know.
Let's just say that some sites play a little game where one person receives the illicit materials and writes about it, and the other person who got them legitimately can confirm that they're real.
Oh my god!
I noticed Brad's selfie has much better skin color tone than the real Brad.
That's because it was taken with an iPhone. I will tell you,
I was just curious if that happened, if I pressed the B, and it did.
Yep.
When that happened the first time on the show, Paul made a comment, said Brad is just going to love this, and he was exactly right.
I mean, you don't even have to show up to get to be part of the show, right?
Yep.
Yeah. No. It's Jesus.
Thank you to Alex Gumpel for making that just for me, just because it tickles my fancy. And those of you not watching on video aren't probably clear about what's going on. But we have.
I just want to believe that you do that occasionally on other shows, and it just confuses everybody.
What is that? It's like a little prairie dog. His prairie dog.
Yeah.
Just pops exactly. up, looks around, goes back in his hole. Did you see your shadow, Brad?
Yes. Do we have six more weeks of winter to look forward to?
Yes, we do.
I hope not.
The new Surface Pro, no longer numbered, although this would be 5, right?
Yeah, I think they are acknowledging a couple of things. One, that it's not a big enough update to warrant a number, you know, and a Surface Pro 4.2 doesn't sound very good. But also that, you know, Microsoft's other Surface products don't have numbers. And if you look down the list, this kind of fits in better with the branding scheme that they have now. So it makes some sense.
So I want to, Lee, if you scroll back up, I want to point something out in their stock imagery here.
Yes.
And this, I'm going to go ahead and ruin this image for everybody listening.
Yep.
Does that bird not look like it's getting shot in the head?
Oh God. Oh, you just ruined it. Are you saying that's blood splatter?
It looks like a Call of Duty headshot. That's all
I said. I hate sit you. Still.
I hate you, Brad Sims. I hate you. But, you know, I already have that in my mind because that glowing window that is the default Windows 10 has always looked to me like a basement window. Like I'm in the basement looking up at the little.
This is the last light you're ever going to see.
So it is easy to spoil these desktop wallpapers permanently. Yep. I'm going to tell you my most my happiest feature of this new thing, which is it's got the kickstand, but the kickstand now can be arbitrary angles, including that 18 degree angle that my beloved Surface Studio.
So the funny thing is, you know, anyone I think would agree it's kind of a minor update in many ways, and yet there are a list of things that make this thing very interesting. Right. One is the thing you just said. It goes back, I think, 169 degrees, so it gives you that Surface Studio mode. And if you see what that looks like in a picture, it's really far back.
Almost too flat, I thought. But you don't have stuck there, are you? I mean, is it smooth?
No. Oh, no. It's a smooth variable hinge. You know, you can go to anywhere in between. The Surface Dial works on the screen, which is the first non-Surface Studio device for that to be the case. They'll be releasing firmware updates, I think, for Surface Pro 4 and Surface Book that will enable that feature.
Oh, really?
It's supported by a new Surface Pen that doesn't actually come with it, which is an acknowledgement of how few people do actually use the pen. But for those who do, the pen is really important, and the pen includes a bunch of extra features, including 4 times the pressure sensitivity, a tilt feature, so you can do the kind of smudge thing like you would with a pencil or a crayon. I think it was double the accuracy and much lower latency, meaning that as you press the pen to the glass, it feels more like writing on paper. There's less of a little bit of a lag. But the thing I just read today, which is really interesting to me, and this is the what Microsoft didn't say bit, or didn't say enough, is that when you have this combination of things, and you have to have all three of them for it to work, the new Surface Pro, the new Surface Pen, and then the Windows 10 Creators Update, which of course comes with the Surface Pro, you'll actually get much better performance with that pen than you will if you use the new Surface Pro with a different pen, or like an older pen, the old Surface Pro with the new pen, right? Because there's actually special hardware in the Surface Pro, the new one, that hardware accelerates ink interaction in Windows 10.
I can't use that new pen with my Creative Studio, my Surface Studio.
No, you can. You just won't get the same.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you'll get the other benefits. I mean, you'll still get the pressure sensitivity and all that stuff, but what you won't get is that low latency.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously future Surface devices will no doubt include this technology, but they're kind of doing that Apple thing where there's a custom chipset in there.
Yep.
And they're literally hardware accelerating Windows Ink for the first time.
Yeah, and that's interesting. I didn't think the latency was bad before.
No, I don't think anyone did. But, you know, it's better
as
well.
It's one of the
things
artists really care a lot about.
Yeah. And unfortunately for Microsoft, it's a thing that's hard to communicate visually, because if you watch videos of the pen writing on this device, it actually looks like it's lagging.
Yeah.
And it's not in real life, but there's something about when you record the video of it, it just doesn't match somehow.
No, it feels very real time. Although, again, I'm not an artist, and a lot of people tell me that the Apple Pencil, which is the main competition for this, is a little less latent, a little more direct.
Yeah, and by the way, that's been my experience as well. In fact, you know, anyone who's a Surface owner should go to an Apple store sometime and just try that out. It's a little disarming in a way, because you pick that thing up and it does have a very natural feel. And Microsoft is now claiming that the new Surface Pen, when used with this new Surface Pro, is in fact the fastest electronic pen. I haven't tested it, I don't have an opinion.
I did
that,
think it was interesting. Microsoft compared this new Surface Pro more to the iPad Pro than they did to another laptop.
Yeah,
because they have a laptop now.
Uh-huh. Although, by the way, that's the other big change, right? I mean, they're marketing this as a laptop, which is not exactly the original marketing.
No, the most versatile laptop is what they're calling it, which it used to be the tablet that could replace your laptop. Now it's the most versatile laptop, but it's a versatile laptop that ships without a keyboard. So the messaging there is a little less
than versatile.
I think they're trying to make everything as consistent as possible. But also, you know, in Microsoft, this has been one of the big stories this year. How pragmatic this company is when it comes to just accepting what people are doing, right? So you saw all the mobile stuff from Build, where they kind of embrace Android and iOS in new ways. This is a case of them just embracing what the customers actually do. It's like, look, most people don't use the pen. We're not going to include it. Most people actually use this thing like a laptop. Well, it's a laptop then. You know, we're just going to accept that.
Right, right.
And I believe they told us it was only 30% of their users are actually using that pen. So it's a really small, percentage, 30% of how many of them are selling.
That surprised me. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but really, though, other than people who are drawing every day, what benefit does the pen offer that your finger doesn't? I mean, most people might use it just to tap on the screen a little bit or sign once. But for the vast majority of people, you can just tap on that screen and get the exact same input as that pen. Yeah. So they're not including it. We actually started to see that shift at the end of the Surface Pro 4 lifecycle, too. They started offering SKUs without the pen. So,
And I bet that was maybe an experiment to see how that changed.
Yeah, what the reaction
what they found
was.
People kind of liked it.
Yeah.
Brad, this is probably true for you as well. We had to sign an NDA for the Surface Pro, which is very unusual these days. And I signed mine on my Surface Book using a Surface Pen. But in one of life's great coincidences, I don't use Surface Pen. I know this is a point of some contention with some people, but I just don't really have much of a use for it. And yesterday I was editing a graphic on the Surface Book. And what I needed to do was move this line over a very finite kind of a way. And even with the mouse, it was just kind of a struggle. And then I thought, wait a minute, I bet I could use the pen for this. And actually, it worked. It worked pretty great.
Hmm. Yeah.
So
when you need it, it's great. I mean, Microsoft has done a good job in that department. I think this is also foreshadowing where we're going to see the updates for the next studio, right? They're going to have this built-in custom silicon, probably better than what's in the Surface Pro, I would guess, right now, since it should be, you know, provided if they launch something in October for this, they have six more months of it, a new pen. The other thing the new pen doesn't have, Paul, which is going to devastate you since they got rid of the pen loop, is it no longer has that little clip that allows you to, put it on your shirt or whatever.
Yeah, the nerd
clip.
They
got rid of that.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the little, you can.
But, you know, probably, because it is magnetic, you'll still, adhere to the side of the Surface, right?
Yep.
So apparently, the magnetic connection, they didn't provide a figure, but it's dramatically stronger than it was before. Because anyone who owns a Surface knows if you throw this thing in a bag, it's going to come flying off at some point. I think you could probably almost pick up the Surface device with the pen. It's like this super strong connection now. And I don't know if that played into the decision to remove the clip, or if they were just trying to do the lipstick on a pig thing where they wanted to be able to quickly identify the new one versus the old one. I don't know why that's not there anymore.
You know, I kick myself because, of course, I should have been reading your blog better and paying attention, because I ordered a Lenovo Yoga, X1 Yoga, and it's coming on Friday. And
Really?
Yeah.
Which one?
Well, but there are certain advantages to this because I like the Lenovo keyboard. I don't like a detachable keyboard as much. It's a Yoga, so it does the – it's the second generation. The one,
I got
and
you. Okay.
It has a pen, and I got the one with the OLED screen.
Right, which is beautiful.
Which is gorgeous.
Yeah, that's
and a good spent a pretty
I thought what you were going to say is that you made a mistake in not stocking up on Surface Pen loops, to which I would have agreed.
No, I did not do that. Actually, the way Lenovo does it, the pen just goes inside the screen. There's a little slot.
Yeah, which is the smart way to do it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't mind it on the studio because I never – the studio is not – you know, it's never –
Yeah, it never goes anywhere.
I don't throw that in a bag, obviously. But I think, with a laptop.
I agree.
Anyway, we're going to do a rundown of like kind of the best Windows laptops at some point. Father Robert and I will do a Dell and Acer, the Lenovo.
Yep.
We've got a you know, I had been kind of turning up my nose at Toshiba for the last few years, but their new Portage looks pretty sweet.
I honestly, you couldn't point to a PC maker these days and not find at least a handful of really nice machines. Yeah. It's kind of incredible. Yep. We live in a time of great choice.
Yeah, that's part of it is I'm a Mac guy, and I'm missing that choice. The Lenovo has a a Type A USB as well as two Type Cs. It has a full size HDMI connector. Yeah. It has an Ethernet connector for crying out loud. And it has a real keyboard.
Sure.
So I kind of no Type C on the new Surface Book, and I know some people were a little perturbed by that.
Yeah, I have a problem with that because.
So do I.
Yeah, there are PC makers that have done a nice job bridging the gap between the past, which is these legacy ports, and then the future, which is USB-C. But not just USB-C, but Thunderbolt 3, right? And there's room on all of these Surface devices to simply add that port. And when you do that, you get the advantage of kind of future-proofing it because you can later add a USB-C Thunderbolt 3 dock and get tremendous performance out of that, be able to drive multiple displays at 60 hertz at 4K resolutions, for example. Power off of that thing. It would charge more quickly off of that thing. But they're kind of sticking with this old school USB 3 based stuff. And it's kind of a lack of leadership, frankly, that I find kind of surprising from Microsoft because frankly, you know, they've done a pretty good job aside from this one weird issue of helping the industry move in a certain direction. And this is an example of the industry moving in a certain direction without them. They're literally the only company not doing it. And I just find that to be bizarre.
It's odd.
The other issue with this stuff, too, is the three of us on this call or on this podcast are a little bit different than the average user, right? We get new machines either for review or whatever, honestly, probably every 3 months or so. People who are going to buy this laptop are going to have it for are going to have it for 3 years, probably 2-3 years at least, if not longer. And in 2 to 3 years, not having USB Type-C is going to become an issue. And so it's a very short-sighted look at saying, you know what, people upgrade all the time. No, they don't. They really don't. That's why PC sales have flatlined a little bit. Not that Windows is going away, but these machines just last longer. There were people talking on Twitter all the time how they still use their original Surface Pro. And they're like, should we upgrade yet?
Original Surface RT even, you know. And I find it, you know, their stance on this is actually borderline disrespectful, you know. I don't know if it was The Verge or somebody had asked Panos Panay, one of the guys from Surface, well, what about USB-C? And the person responded, well, we'll provide a USB-C adapter for people who like dongles. And, you know, that A, doesn't meet the criticism, and B, has nothing to do with the problem. A USB-C adapter is just going to give you the port. It's not going to give you the performance of Thunderbolt 3. That's something that needs to be built into the device. And we got questions on the podcast we do at BWW about this. You know, well, they're going to come up with a dongle. Isn't that going to solve the problem? No. All it is USB 3 and a USB-C shaped connector.
I'm also really excited about the idea of a non-proprietary charger.
Thank you. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. And not just charger, but expandability. Like this is the ability to do anything off of a universal port that everyone is using. Mm-hmm. You know, that Microsoft sells a Surface dock for X amount of dollars. Well, maybe Belkin or whoever will sell one for half the price. And it will be just as good because it's USB-C / Thunderbolt 3. And this is the point of the PC industry. We were just talking about choice. Going the proprietary route in 2017 makes no sense. No sense.
Somebody's going to write in or comment mm-hmm. about this, that they're going to make the argument that Microsoft will say, and maybe even Microsoft will say this, that they did this mm-hmm. because then it will work with everything else people have already bought for Surface. I don't buy that. They could have made an adapter or something.
All you have to do is add the port. This is what HP is doing. HP is coming out with a new line of business computers this year that each come with the proprietary older HP-style barrel port for power and a USB-C / Thunderbolt 3 port or one or more. The idea is businesses can reuse all of their charges, all of their docks. That stuff still works. But for those people that want to move forward to USB-C, you get faster charging and you get way more throughput on that thing. And it opens up these new expansion possibilities. That's my point. You can bridge the past with the future. Everyone who says that they don't need this technology doesn't matter. The point is some people do need it, and adding it doesn't hurt anybody. It benefits everybody. And for them not to do this is just painful. It's just too bad.
Can you imagine how awkward it would have been if they came out with a Type-C on this and didn't have it on the laptop? That would have been a swift kick in the...
Well,
that would have been real weird. Mm-hmm. But they made the decision
for people
clearly,
who like dongles. I got a dongle.
This is probably... I would think this would be the last Surface without a Type-C.
I would have said that 2 months ago, but the Surface is already in market. When Surface Studio came out without that port, I thought, how could they do that? Crazy. And here we are 6 months later, or whatever it is. Same thing.
They want to leave room for the OEMs, something for the OEMs to do.
Yeah, that could be.
The one thing that I just dawned on me is the Surface 3 charged over USB. Remember?
Yes, it did. Yep.
And we all thought, okay, this is, Microsoft making the transition. That machine's, 2 years old, I think, now at this point? And it charged over USB, I believe, micro. And so here we are 2 years later, and they're not, the fool haven't gone that route. So what are you going to do?
Yeah. What else? Cameras. It's hello camera. 2.6 pounds. Same weight as the Surface Pro 4.
A great line about that, by the way. They described the Surface Pro as being lighter than the bag you'll carry it in.
Yeah, that's not including keyboard though.
Leo, it's marketing. Obviously.
I'm sure the keyboard doesn't.
I don't know
that
why.
Much.
Are we really going to ask questions about marketing tech?
Well, weight is an issue for me because I'm going to be taking whatever this laptop. On my trip, and one of the places we're going, you can't bring more than 8 kilograms of weight of luggage. So a 3 pound laptop, which the Lenovo is, versus a 1.7 pound laptop, that's a big difference. That's a big difference.
Yeah.
The other thing is, should some laptop ban actually happen, would this thing pass as a tablet?
Oh, because you just leave the keyboard off. Oh, that's interesting.
Just attach them, put them in different bags, carry them separately.
That would sell some.
It's potentially. I mean, I'm not sure, but.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thought.
Maybe.
So the kickstand is continuous. That's one question I had. So you can anywhere from the kind of somewhat upright to all the way laid back. But the design is similar, a little more curvy, right?
It's very similar.
That's how we describe Paul, too.
We're all a little more curvy.
I'm working on that.
He's actually less curvy, Brad.
He's less curvy, yeah. Still curvy.
I was thinking more of the hourglass figure, Paul. not so much the pear.
Oh, I missed the most important. I buried the lead. One word.
What's that?
Alcantara.
Yeah.
Alcantara.
Actually, I imagine, know what's interesting? Sorry.
I was going to say, I imagine when you walk into Panos' house, everything is covered. The countertops, the toilet
shack,
seat.
It's carpeting. It's Alcantara carpeting.
Exactly.
Remember when Nokia used to do colors, right? So Nokia, when they came out the gate with Windows Phone, had kind of that aqua blue color like Brad's top there. And then one year, 20-whatever year, when they announced the 930, they went to a luminous kind of green color and then that bright orange color. And that was like the color for that year. And then it kind of all fell apart after that. I almost feel like the colors they introduced with Surface Laptop and then again now with Surface Pro, they're like the 2017 colors, We get that kind of that cobalt blue color, the crimson red kind of color.
I kind of like these. I ordered the red Surface laptop.
Yeah, that was that's a good choice.
Yeah,
that's
I can't wait to get it. But yeah, that'll probably come while I'm gone, unfortunately.
You can send it to my house. We'll take good care of it.
Well, so the Surface laptop, how does that fit in with the Surface, the new Surface Pro? It's a lower end device, obviously.
Carefully.
We're not.
No, it's not. It's not actually. I don't think I would describe it as a lower end device. The Pro and the laptop, in some ways, I think the internals are pretty close. Like they don't. Neither one of them offers a DGPU, right? So they're probably actually pretty similar. The laptop has a bigger screen. It is a high DPI pixel sense display, but it's not as high res as say the Surface Book. And I that machine is a 3000 by 2000, 3x2 display. I don't know off the top of my head what the Surface laptop is, but it's a lower res, and so it's a lower DPI. Other than that, I mean, I think they're actually pretty similar. They offer the same basic colors.
Interesting.
Yeah. The Pro does technically cost less at, I believe it starts at $799, but again, that's without at least a minimum $129 for a keyboard, unless you already have one, which... To be honest, for people buying this, there's a very good chance they might already have a Surface Type cover somewhere lying around their house. But so it is $200 cheaper if you don't need that cover. So that's one advantage.
But roughly equal. But the prices are roughly equal for similar configurations. So the really the biggest difference is detachable keyboard or not, mostly.
Right. Yep. Right. And I, you know, the pen wouldn't be as useful in a laptop. I mean, you kind of hold the back of the screen and write on it. It's not. Yeah. It's not a great experience.
Yeah. Does it use the new pen? Does it take? Is the laptop like the new Surface Pro optimized for that pen?
No.
Man.
I mean, it would
work
fine.
I don't even have it yet, and it's obsolete.
Well, no, I mean, remember, so you'll still get the 4,096 levels of pressure sensitivity. You'll still get the tilt. What you won't get is the same low latency, right? Because you don't have that hardware acceleration in the device.
Guess it's not too late.
But it doesn't mean it's going to be terrible. It's still better than the other pen. Remember, too, that, you know, the pen is, I don't want to say delayed, but it's not shipping at the same time. That new pen will not be available on the day that Surface Pro becomes available.
So should I, what do you think? Should I cancel my laptop order and replace it with the Pro?
So for me, I would not be able to use the Surface Pro because that screen's just a little too small for me. If you looking at that screen are okay with it, yeah, it would be a much better thing to carry around, right?
It's a 12.3 inch.
Yeah,
that's pretty small, actually.
It is on the smaller end, but I don't know. I think the Surface Pro is going to be better at portability, even though they're both really tiny devices. You can technically make that Surface Pro even smaller than the laptop. So for those extreme use cases where every ounce counts, you know, the Pro is going to be a little bit better in that regard.
Yeah, you wouldn't notice it in a bag for sure. I mean, that's neat. I mean, I kind of wish I could deal with it. I really prefer bigger screens. And I'm always trying to look for that kind of balance. I find that the 13.5 inch screen on the Surface Book, which is the same screen size as a Surface laptop, is just about perfect. Like it's a nice size, and the 3x2 aspect ratio helps as well, because, you know, in making it taller, you're kind of getting the, it's almost like a 14-inch-ish kind of screen. You get that kind of effect.
So this is the Pro 4. This is Alex's Pro 4. So it's the same. I mean, really, effectively the same, right?
The screen is the same.
Yeah.
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 Oh, I'm sorry, Alex. You were getting the shot there. Yeah. I mean, so if you've played with a Surface, you'll know roughly. It doesn't, you know, and that I wasn't thinking it was small until you said it. Now, yeah, it is, you know, it's a little, yeah. But that's why it's so light, right?
Right.
And I think you could conceivably persuade an airline that this is a tablet, not a laptop.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it was in a bag and they scoped it, whether, what it looks like to them.
Okay, here's a question for the chat room, maybe you too, Alex. When you go through the TSA, do you take your Surface Pro out of the bag, or is it considered a tablet?
They've always caught me with the Pro.
They've always caught you.
But the old 3, the Atom one, usually
the 3 fooled him, but the Atom.
I wonder if it just looks too much like a PC inside.
Oh, you know?
It's going to have. Well, but that, by the way, that's one of the benefits of the new Surface Pro. The M3 and the i5 version don't have fans, right? And I wonder if one of the telltale things they're looking for is they probably see the keyboard kind of shining through, and then also the, you know, the round fan design. Because an iPad doesn't have that.
That's what the chat room's saying. Hell's Kitchen says that. Rich Woods says he's never, ever been able to convince the TSA that his Surface Pro was a tablet. On the other hand, Web1110 says, I never take my Surface out.
Yeah.
Maybe it just depends.
I think it also probably depends on if you have TSA pre-check, because I never take my laptop out of the bag anymore.
If you have pre-check, you don't have to do anything. You just you can leave your shoes on, you can carry a bomb, it doesn't matter.
You get to keep your dignity.
Get to keep your dignity. Yeah. No cavity searches. It's a great thing.
Involuntary cavity searches.
Yeah, only voluntary. it's so strange because it's really a security theater, because I often get pre-check when I'm traveling at business class, or I paid extra for the Southwest get on, you get pre-check. And I'm thinking, if I'm a bad guy, I'm going to go first class anyway, right?
I'm going to spring for this, because guess what? I'm not paying the credit card bill anyway.
The 9/11 bombers were all in first class because it's closer to the cockpit. So I don't...
It's silly. The whole thing is silly.
Theater. It's all theater.
Yep.
Not that I shouldn't be saying this so close to travel. I'm on the list now. I'm definitely on the list.
Hey, Leo, we hear you like theater. Well, why don't you come back here and enjoy this film we're about to show you?
Oh, Lord. I'm in deep, deep trouble. No fans? Does that mean it's going to be running hot?
That's a good question.
I worry about this with the i5.
I do, too.
I really do. They've got to be throttling the CPU at some point, because this i5s, they're not, granted, it's not an i7, but you can really crank on those things and they're going to heat up. And there's only one way to stop it from heating up if there's no fan. That's throttling the performance down.
I don't even know if this is true anymore, but the difference between an i5 and the i7 is like a slip of a knife. Like they literally test the yield and see where they're at, and some of them get called i5s and some of them get called i7s.
I no longer order i7s. I just don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not where you're going to get the benefit, right?
I get more
RAM.
GPU's
going to help. It's kind of a goofy thing. So the only thing I'll say to this, though, I was fascinated that they were offering this. I thought, wow, how unique. And then one day later, Huawei announced some MateBooks. And one of the lines, I don't remember which one, but I want to say it was like the MateBook X, which is kind of their MacBook Air looking device, which is really attractive. M3, i5, and i7 versions, all of which are fanless. And they were talking same thing as Microsoft, kind of a new thermal design that makes this possible. I think Brad's right. I think they're ratcheting down the clock to make that work.
Sure.
But it's interesting. I mean, fanless is one of the goals, you know?
Yeah. What else you want to say about this?
Thirteen and a half hours of battery life?
Yeah, good, much improved, right? What is that, 30% more or something like that?
50%.
50%,
Wow. Yeah, 9 to 13 and a half. Yeah, it's big.
And is Microsoft pretty accurate with all of that?
No, that's way off. But it's it's video playback, right? So what I will say is, if you accept the fact that, for example, a fitness device is not going to be accurate, but at least it's accurate to itself.
Yeah.
50% performance or battery life improvement is still a 50% improvement. So I'll need to test that to see what it's really like. But I think the battery life is significantly better.
I have to say pricing is pretty aggressive. It starts at $800.
Well, remember, that's not a keyboard or a pen.
Yeah, and it's not the one you want, right?
So that one you're clicking on right there is the sweet spot, right? Yeah, so $1,299.
Yep. Yeah, and that's the same as the Surface laptop, isn't it?
Yeah.
For 8 gigs. And,
yeah, that's for the colored model.
Storage.
But $160 for Alcantara and presumably 60 for the pen. I don't think the price has gone up on that. Now we're talking about a different kind of purchase here, right? This is over $50 now. That's an expensive device. It's a premium device.
By all accounts. But that's where they want to be, though. Microsoft doesn't want to be in the value proposition. That's what they're doing with their OEMs. They say, hey, look, we'll go build the Hero just like they did with the Surface laptop and Windows 10S, and you guys can backfill. Because if they started playing in those price points again, I think their OEMs would come with pitchforks to their door very, very quickly.
Yeah. I agree. And listen, you have many choices of great Surface Pro-like devices from every single PC maker on earth. So if you happen to like the style of Lenovo's or HP's or whatever, they have at least one. Many of them have more than one.
The new pen's $100.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. So that makes me wonder if they're going to keep the other one in market. Wow, that's $100.
Now, there is more reason to get a pen. I mean, when I use my Surface Studio, the only thing I use a pen for is as a telestrator, which is great for the shows. But sure. At home, I don't know if I'd use a pen much, except they've added some pen stuff to Office now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes and no.
Yeah.
Yes and no.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, Paul. All this stuff was mostly in there already, I think, it seemed like.
Inking experiences, including a new app called Whiteboard.
Yeah, so you'll notice that I highlight exactly, I guess, two things and then a third that's coming soon. Microsoft listed about 8 or 10 things, and most of those things are already in the product, right? Okay. So, and by the way, don't get me wrong. They've done a really good job of adding and enhancing support for not just Surface Pen, but any pen in Windows 10 and in Office 365 in the core apps. And that's excellent. But I think most people don't realize that stuff's there, and that's why they're talking about some of the other stuff. But if you look at what they're adding next month in the June updates, there's a new like a pen gallery, which is customizable and will sync to your account. So if you go into Word on one PC and you say, these are the pens I want in this order and I use these ones the most, and then you would go into Excel on a different computer, you're going to see the same gallery. It's going to sync. And so that's cool. If you're familiar with Surface Hub, and nobody is, they have a gigantic whiteboard app, which is really cool. And it supports multiple users. And you can stand there and draw on the board together. So they're bringing that app to Surface, to any Surface device, any device, frankly. And it will support multiple users standing in front of it, if I'm not mistaken. I believe that's what it said, two users. And whether or not that's true, multiple users remotely as well. So, they support those kind of real-time collaboration features as well.
I'm just saying Google's whiteboard is on sale now.
I know. So for one-third the price.
$5,000.
Yep.
I'm really tempted. I wonder what that would look like on camera. I'm kind of tempted to get one for the studio.
It looks a little too cartoonish to me, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Especially that red one looks like, what's that? The little easel tool that you draw the straight lines on.
Etch-a-Sketch.
It looks like an Etch-a-Sketch, right? It has exactly the same.
But that's friendly.
Yeah, if you're 3 years old. Yeah. I mean, I agree that a child would not be afraid of this device.
Look at the latency. But, did you see that latency?
Yeah. It's not great.
But you know what? That's the film thing I was talking about. Yeah, it is worse on screen.
Okay.
I'm not saying the latency on this thing is fine. I don't actually know. But there's something – you could see it in the Surface videos. It's the same issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be real curious to see how this thing does.
If we could shoot Microsoft's, this on screen, I would get one. I think it would be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Microsoft's got their Surface Hub around the same price for their 55 inches.
Oh, for that size? Oh, yeah, because this is smaller than the big – Surface Hub.
Yeah, not the 84 inch one's like $22,000 or Ford Focus. Take your pick your device.
We have this
smaller one's $8,500-ish, I think.
Yeah, this is way less expensive actually, and it's cheaper and it's probably not as powerful. But this is the thing. There's a section at the end of the notes for today where we look at Google I/O, and you're going to see a lot more of this stuff. And I know this is going to freak people out. I'll just apologize in advance, but Google is doing to Microsoft right now what Microsoft used to do to the rest of the industry, which is coming in with something that's cheaper and is good enough. And over time, they improve it until it's actually as good as anything else and maybe better. And so if you compare this thing to Surface Hub today, I have no doubt that it's not as good. If you compare Daydream to what Microsoft is doing with Windows Mixed Reality or certainly HoloLens, probably not as good. I get that. But the thing is, those things and many others are good enough and they're much cheaper. And when you're a cash-strapped educational institution or a business of any size, these things become really interesting, And I'm not saying this thing is any good. I don't really know anything about it. I don't care about it personally. But I look at this thing and I think this is smart because Microsoft has clearly identified a market and so is Google.
Right.
And Google's product, once again, is cheaper.
Now, but it's $5,000 and there's a $600 a year management fee. And it doesn't come with a stand, which is another 13,
that's how they get you, Leo. It's the aftermarket stand business.
The stand is expensive.
This thing must be, it's like a Chrome device, isn't it? Isn't this actually like a Chrome
thing? I think it probably is a Chromebook.
It really is. It's a companion device. I don't even think it actually works with Windows yet. At least when they announced it.
No, you have to be a G Suite subscriber. It's all in G Suite.
Yes. So it's you got to be all in that Google thing. The one thing, Paul, and we've talked about this many, many years ago. What Google has done, at least in this space, is that even if you don't buy a Jamboard, you're at least cross-shopping a Google product, which for Google in that space is a huge
you're
win.
In the conversation.
People are in the enterprise saying, you know what? Let's let these look at what Google's doing. Even if they're not buying it, it's a win. We used to say this about Surface and Apple laptops. You know what? You may not buy a Surface Pro today, but at least Microsoft has Mindshare.
Yeah.
And this is what Google's doing in the enterprise space, which is where Microsoft should be scared about Google.
Yeah.
Yeah, Leo, you were away, I think, for this thing. But maybe you were here for this. You know, back when the education – sorry, I've traveled so much lately, I can't keep track of what week is
week. Week. And I've been
I know you weren't here last week. But actually, you were here for the education event, weren't you?
Yeah, I was.
You know, one of the big issues back then was, you know, is Microsoft people, Microsoft fans, Windows fans tend to have these kind of attitudes about different things. Like, I don't like iOS because it's just like a grid of icons. I don't like Chromebook because it's just a web browser. People don't really like that stuff. You know, people want Windows. They want more powerful things. It's like, you guys have no idea what's happening in the real world. Like, not only are these things really popular and they sell well, they are popular with the teachers that use them. Mm-hmm. They're popular with the students that use them. And this is a really serious issue. And, you know, I'm sorry, like, I feel like I'm the Pied Piper here, but, you know, that's what needs to be addressed. You know, us just making fun of it because it's Google and, oh my God, I wonder, now they can steal more of your privacy because it's got such a big screen. You know, it's like, you're kind of missing the point, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like when Android came out and everyone was like, you know, it's just Android. They've got it on one phone. We've got Windows Mobile, what was it, 6.5 or 6.1 at that time. And now they've got 2 billion users because it was a basic product and it got the job done. And here we are.
Yep. This is the Microsoft playbook. That's what makes it painful for me. You know, this is what Microsoft did to, you know, when they got into work groups and small businesses and then kind of mid-sized businesses, and now they own the enterprise, you know. But here's Google. Chipping away. Every day there's like an announcement about something they're doing to chip away at something Microsoft does. And they're just so full of money, they can just do whatever they want. This is the most dangerous company on earth. They just don't care. They're like, everything's a computer science problem. Let's just solve it. And to them, Office is a computer science problem that they're going to solve.
Incidentally, new TSA rules just announced minutes ago that you will have to remove all electronics bigger than cell phones. And some food items from your bags and place them in bins to be screened separately. So they're worried about the exploding pear, apparently. But
don't give them ideas, Leo.
pre-check? No, you can do whatever you want.
Yep.
Do whatever.
You can bring the whole banana.
If you can fit the jam bag, jam board into the security thing,
fine.
You can bring it onto the plane.
Yeah.
I just want to give first class a small presentation here. Do you mind if I just plug this thing in?
So that whole conversation we had about whether, you know, the Surface Pro could pass, it's pretty moot.
Yeah.
Everything's got to come out now. Everything must go.
That's good, because I felt like flying wasn't intrusive enough as it is. So thank you. Thank you for that.
Wow. I'm looking forward to this trip out of the United States. It's going to be a real adventure.
Yeah, it sounds awesome.
1Password did an interesting thing yesterday. They announced a travel mode. It's a password vault. You can turn on travel mode. It will and it will delete everything from your phone. No passwords on your phone. And then, you know, when you get into the country and you're
interesting.
You can designate passwords that you don't want deleted.
Oh,
that are travel safe.
You hand it over, and the only thing on there is like Angry Birds. You're like, have fun with that.
Yep. Exactly.
I'm dedicated.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
I think that's what we're going to see is this now. And it's too bad. I mean, this pushback against government. So now you're going to get commercial entities going, okay, all right, we'll figure out a way to do this. Travel mode.
Yeah. When I'm in the taxi, it'll just sync all the stuff back up. And I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Let me explain my nightmare scenario here. So Paul and I are going to be taking a trip to Amsterdam for Office 365 Engage. Mm-hmm. And here's my nightmare scenario. Paul and I are actually flying on the same plane to and fro.
Oh my God, that's right.
if flying home, we can't use a laptop, there's a high probability I might murder Paul on the plane.
Right. I'll be fighting him off with my iPad mini. I'll be like, look, Brad, there are movies on it. Look at the movies.
I don't know if a game of Uno has ever turned violent on a plane, but we will find out.
Yeah.
Yep. Uno. Yep. He's going to threaten me with a spork.
Bring your Uno deck. You're not going to have anything to do for 12 hours.
It'll be draw four and he'll get a spoon to the eye.
Right. And if you take that freaking video camera out, I swear to God, I'm going to kill you right where you stand.
Oh, this should be fun. Oh, my. Oh, my. Let's take a break. We got more to talk about. Brad Sams is here from Therot.com and Petri.com. And, of course, Paul Therot, as always, from Therot.com. And Mary Jo Foley in Japan. Will she be back? Now, next week, you're not going to Amsterdam next week. When are you going to Amsterdam?
No, this is 3 or 4 weeks from now. Okay. So she'll be back next week. Do you know what day she comes back? She might even be flying home today or tomorrow.
Okay.
I'm not really sure.
So the gang will be together next week, and then I'll be gone for a couple of weeks. And it's summertime. Summertime is travel time. What are you doing this summer, Paul? Are you going away?
Yeah, we're going to Barcelona this year.
Oh, I hate you. You and your jamón ibérico. Jamón.
It's gonna be a lot of ham pictures.
Jamón.
That stuff is candy.
Thank you once again. Our crack multimedia department has conjured up. It looks like they put it on top of Joe Belfiore because I see the blonde Joe Belfiore wig. It was all very confusing, but anyway.
Gosh,
man, we have a crack multimedia team.
CNN style graphics here.
This is a special edition. Breaking news: Mary Jo Foley in Japan. Our show today brought to you by Upside. I like Upside a lot. If you're doing business travel, you know. I don't know, Petri's probably big enough that you have a travel. Do you have a travel department at Petri that you call them?
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Okay, you're talking to them.
Okay, you don't. Brad Sams is the travel department.
Yeah.
No, but when I worked at Ziff Davis, if you were going to go on business travel, you call them up. They book it all for you. They do the whole thing. And part of the reason they wanted to do that, they have pre-negotiated fees, rates with hotels and airlines that save you a lot of money. Now, if you're a smaller company like Twit or Petri, you're doing this yourself, I want to point you to Upside.com. This is from Jay Walker. He created Priceline. And by the way, when I talked to Jay about this, I thanked him for resuscitating William Shatner's career. I said, did you hire Bill Shatner? He said, Yes, I did. But he did sell Priceline some time ago. He's, I'm sure, been constrained from doing anything in the field for a while. But now he's back, baby, and he has created something fantastic. Pre-negotiated prices with airlines and hotels, so your business is going to get the same great deal those big businesses get, no matter how small it is. And they make it easy, too. If you're doing the booking, you don't have to spend you don't have to go through a long list of things. You just tell Upside where you're going, and they'll find you the top 6 flights and hotels. Bada bing, bada boom. It's just that simple. Not only that, if you need help, they have amazing 24/7 concierge service. You can call, email, chat, reach them on social, before, during, and after every trip. But one of the things I really like about Upside is you also get a great deal as the employee, because with every single trip you book at Upside.com, you're also going to get a gift card. And not some cheesy gift card, but a gift card with Amazon or Nordstrom or Target. They've got 50 different cards you can choose from. And we're talking some big bucks, a gift card worth $100, $200, even $300. Lisa and I booked a trip, got a gift, $300 gift card. But now, if it's your company, if you're working as it is ours, you can apply that gift card to the total cost and bring it down even more. But if you're like Brad and you're booking some flights for yourself and screw this Petri guy, take the gift card. He's got the savings, right? And it's a win-win. Your gift card arrives in the email just 72 hours after booking your trip. You can get even more with overseas trips. There is no limit, by the way, on trips or gift cards. If you travel for business or know someone who does, tell them about Upside. And don't forget to tell them use the offer code WINDOWS the first time they use it, because they guarantee at least a $100 gift card on your first trip. Save big on travel. Get a big gift card every trip. Minimum purchase is required. Some details. You guys see the site for complete details. I love it. Upside. We've been using it now for all our business travel. Upside.com. And don't forget to use the offer code Windows. We're talking about Windows. Windows Weekly. Brad Sams, Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley in effigy. The pop-up Brad Sams whenever we need it. We've got everything. We got everything a podcast could hope for. And
by the way, you mentioned the Microsoft Authenticator app earlier.
Yeah, I love that. I was just using it to log in. Yeah.
Yeah. So the version on iOS or an iPhone supports that Touch ID, which is really nice.
Nice.
Apparently, they just added that capability to Android as well.
Oh, great. Yeah, because I was using it on a Google Pixel.
Yeah. So actually, nice. You should get an update today that will enable that.
I should. Yeah. I shall rush out and do that. One of the things we didn't mention that they also announced that they had this event in China, so I presume that the new Surface Pro is available in China. But
yes.
But the studio wasn't. I didn't realize this. In fact, the studio was very limited. Now
that's
available
right.
in lots more places.
Yeah, and that's the line. You know, the Surface Studio was the last Surface device they released that followed the familiar pattern of releasing first in the U.S. and maybe Canada and then slowly adding other locales over time. And then when you go forward to the Surface Laptop, that device is going to launch in June 15th or whatever in, I don't know, 30 or 40 markets. Like, it's going to be worldwide.
Wow.
And Surface Pro will be the same. And so that's actually a really nice change. There's a lot of negative feedback, I guess we call it, from people who live outside of the United States for such things as that kind of thing, or Cortana only fully works U.S.
we
English.
We hear that all the time because we're, you know, while we're based in the U.S., a lot of our listeners are all over the world. So,
yeah, I don't mean to pass the buck, but it's hard to keep track of that kind of stuff.
I apologize. We just treat it as if everybody's from the U.S.
Yeah. It's Leo's fault for sure.
It's totally my fault. It is. Damn me for creating an international podcast network. What was I thinking?
Yes. How dare you?
I should restrict this to the U.S. only.
You support live translations of your podcasts into other languages.
A lot of people say that I should do a Spanish language and a Chinese language version of the show. And I just tell them, you do it. Go ahead and do your own show in Spanish. Because Latin America is huge.
As a service.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Make your own show. Make your own special music. But yeah,
I'm sorry to interrupt, but there was a guy at Windows IT Pro in Japan whose job was to translate my articles from the magazine into Japanese.
Wow.
And years ago, I met him at, I think it was a CES, not a Comdex, but I met him and he was very excited to meet me for some reason. I'm sure I disappointed him, but
I've been translating your prose for years. I love
you. Literally, that's how his career started. His career was literally translate Paul into Japanese.
Wow.
But he was in Seattle. I ran into him in the press room at Build.
Does he try to duplicate your voice?
I never really got that deep into it, honestly. There's a lot of smiling and bowing.
What's the Japanese word for curmudgeon?
Yes, Thurrott.
Thurrott.
Yes, because it is a
special. It's a special character that looks like the T in my logo. But
how do you say "hold on, Eeyore" in Japanese? That's what I want. Hold on, Eeyore. So I was looking at my HP Spectre. Still no creators update.
Do you even have the previous update? Do you have which Spectre is it? X360.
The one that Mary Jo has as well. The 13T, I think.
Oh, the 13. Okay. Yeah. Yep.
And it's still on 1706. I mean, not 1706, 1603, 1607. That's it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I forced my Surface Book to update, but are people starting to get it now?
Yeah. In fact, Brad got his notification in Seattle. Woo-hoo. Maybe.
No. It was during the middle of the education event. I'm sitting there working. And pops up on my screen and says, hey, it's time to update to the creator's update middle of Microsoft's keynote.
Not time.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I was like, guys, could you hold up on the keynote? Brad needs to update his computer.
You should have done that. You should have said that.
Well, I did do it on Twitter. My phone.
We were following your live blog, actually. And as always, Paul's tweets. Because Paul's tweets are great. In fact, they're even better when we do Windows events. I always make sure we work some of Paul's snark.
I keep waiting for like Frank Shaw to just walk over and be like, seriously, could you just stop?
Stop it.
Here's $100. Just go to the store.
Didn't Apple once quote you?
Yeah. You know what they quoted me on?
What?
The iPad, right before they started three straight years of falling sales.
What was the quote?
It was literally, it was anyone who thinks this device is a game changer is a tool.
Wow. Yep. Oh, man. Therat.
You know, my response to this is simply, hubris is a bitch.
Payback, baby. Payback.
Yep.
So how many people have the creators update? It's a surprisingly low number, I thought.
Yeah. According to AdDuplex, this is Usage Base, so it's probably pretty accurate, is 18%.
What?
So I guess whatever, yeah. 18 times
fewer
5
than
is.
Fewer than 1 in 5. Wow.
That's about, yeah.
That's of people eligible, right? Or is that right. Total users?
It's 18% of Windows 10 PCs are on the.
Okay, so there's a considerable number still on XP and 7. And
No, this is not. It's only Windows 10 we're talking about. 18% of Windows 10 PCs.
Of Windows 10. Oh, so those are all eligible. Yeah.
Yep. So Microsoft, coincidentally, on the same day came out and said, you know, we're on track. We're on the exact rollout track we anticipated. They did confirm something which we had kind of speculated about earlier this month on Patch Tuesday, where they had released a Bluetooth driver through Windows Update as part of that day. And that unblocked a bunch of PCs from getting the update.
Okay. So that's why it's so slow. There's little hardware issues here and there.
Yeah, and I think it accelerates over time. And according to AdDuplex, this is roughly the same speed at which the anniversary update was at this point in time. Although you may recall, right around this time, there was a giant brake sound as the entire thing came to a screeching halt.
Right.
Because of all the problems. So I think this one's going to be fine. And I think we're 6 weeks in. We can say no one has heard of any major issues with this. No one.
Yeah, nothing. No it's webcam nothing. Issues. That's
No Kindle issues. No.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. My favorite thing about that webcam issue was when they were briefing us about the creators update. And they said, "Yeah, somebody wrote up at one point that the anniversary update broke webcams." They had no idea it was me, and I was sitting around the call with them. Like, guys, I wrote that up. Like, that was me. Yep. And it got real silent on the call, and I was like, "You know, you do know realize that you broke the C920 for everybody that was using it." Like, okay.
Leo maybe may not realize the rich history that Brad has being made fun of by Microsoft privately.
Really?
It's frequent.
Really? I wonder why.
It's a little alarming.
Actually, you know, I have to commend Microsoft because of all the companies that we cover, they have the most convivial friendly relationship with the journalists that cover them. You guys, you know, you drink beer together. It feels like more than any other company.
I think there's an honest relationship there, right?
They understand. In other words, you're doing your job.
They understand our role, exactly.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, there's this humorous things that have come out of it. I might have told the story before, but there was a Friday, you know, a year ago or so when Frank Shaw called me and he says, "Hey, what's going on?" I'm like, "Not much. What's going on with you?" And he's like, "I don't." He goes, "You know, it's Friday. I'm just checking in." And I'm like, "Okay, we don't really have a Friday check-in." So, I'm like, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Well, you know, usually you write up some hit piece on Friday, and I'm just curious what's coming down the track." And the funny thing about that to me at the time was I never really thought of it that way. But as it turns out, the previous three Fridays in a row, I had in fact written a Microsoft stinks because, you know, whatever type article, and he was literally just.
That's so funny.
You know, before I head off for the weekend, I just want to make sure you're not going to ruin my life again.
That's so
you know,
funny. Kind of thing. But generally, I mean, they call, they talk, but they don't yell at you. They understand that you're doing your job, right?
No, they try to sway your opinion on life.
Come on, Paul. It's really not that bad.
To the point, Brad was the guy who highlighted the webcam issue, for example. Right. I was the guy who got beaten up with a baseball bat over it because I get dragged into a room with Dave Fortin, who's in charge of Windows reliability, and by the way, has been since Windows NT was a thing. And then he lays out all the data, and he's like, "I just want you to understand that everything we're doing is, you know, super high quality. We have all these, telemetry type things and all." And
defensive.
I'm like,
"He was defensive."
And I'm like, "Well, of course," which is completely understandable. And I'm like, "You know, Brad wrote that article, right? Do you want his phone number? Because you should talk to Brad."
He threw you under the bus, Brad.
I had written something based on that and some other things that, you know, maybe Microsoft needs to have like a reliability initiative. And of course, you know, the thing, it's easy to forget because I think of Microsoft as a giant amorphous thing, you know, But there are people there, and there are people who are in charge of particular things. And I, you know, this is the guy who's in charge of reliability, and he's like, I take great exception to what you wrote. And okay, you know, you can see that, right?
I totally can see that, as long as they also understand that you're doing your job.
They do. They always do. I don't think so. I've ever.
I mean, it's had a, like the HoloLens 2 scoop that I got, which, by the way, nothing was announced this spring, even though people were telling me I was going to be wrong. That was a multi-part conversation with them. I was like, hey, guys, I'm going to run the headline HoloLens 2 canceled. And they're like, of course, you know, you hear them like silently vomiting in a bag in the background, being like, all right, it's all over for us.
You hear like the deflated balloon sound in the back.
But that. But I think that's why they try to keep these doors open.
Yes.
Because when you get information like that, it's to my benefit to go to them and say, hey,
you need a comment.
Here's what I'm going to run.
It would be inappropriate if you didn't get one.
Right. And the absolute true story that this like transpired over a weekend. Ironically enough, Paul, it was actually on a Friday that I got the information. I was like, oh, I'm going to write this up on a Friday.
That's our modus operandi, apparently.
It was a Sunday morning when I finally got like connected to the right people. I'm not even joking. It was like 9 a.m. Oh, I'm literally sitting in a golf cart taking notes while my buddies are teeing off. And they're trying to understand like why I need to be on the phone on a golf course. But, you know, they will go that extra mile to help us out when the time is right. So
when the phone rings and it's nighttime, which is not super unusual, but the weekend is a lot more unusual. And you see such names as Microsoft Corp, Frank Shaw, Terry Myerson, you know, whatever it might be. It's like, you know, like you have that moment of, you know, of self-doubt. Like I'm going to have to take this one.
I would gulp. I would gulp. Yeah. Anytime a 425 area code pops up on the phone, I would go, well,
Stephanie, could you get that? I'm going to be outside.
I'll be out silently vomiting this time.
Yeah.
Sure.
However, I just thought I'd mention that because I am actually very impressed by the kind of relationship.
They're good guys. I mean, that's the thing. And that's the thing. It helps
that.
To remember that. Yeah, I mean, you know, again, I was joking about Google earlier. I'm sure they're all great guys too.
They are too.
Right?
Yeah, I like.
Of course they are. Of course they are. Yeah. But you know, we tend to see them as some giant privacy eating monster that, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. There are people there trying to change the world for the better. That's their mission.
Often have to remind myself of that about any of these companies.
I thought that, you know, I had written, in fact, this is in the notes for later, but I was thinking about, you know, what are the biggest advantages that different companies have and so forth. And I came up with this, whatever the notion was for Google. And I you have to almost write this defensively. Like, I know some of you are thinking that Google is this privacy eating monster and blah, 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 whatever. I have to wonder from the perspective of the two geniuses that started the company, how confusing all of these privacy concerns must be to them, because they are literally thinking about this on some completely different level.
Exactly.
It's about data. Yep. It's about making everything better. And there are these people that just hate the company and the people involved in the company because they perceive it in such a different way. And I bet to those two geniuses, this is just like, what are they? They probably have no idea. Like, who are these apes with the fire sticks that are at the door? Like, what is their problem? You know, it must be so weird for them.
Yeah.
No, I think.
But then they just throw some hundreds out and watch the people scurry.
You remember that kind of odd speech Larry Page gave at the end of Google I.O. a few years ago, which he said, I wish we could just go to an island and do what we want to do.
Was he wearing rollerblades at the time? I think he was.
Yeah, it might have been. That was, I think, the same Google I.O., as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
But Mark Zuckerberg is completely baffled by it. Yeah. You know, I mean, he thinks he's changed. Mm-hmm. He's making the world a better place. He's completely baffled.
Well, he should get on Facebook someday because, let me tell you, the stuff I see on Facebook, I don't know. I would describe it as a better world.
Right.
Yeah. It's pretty much a culmination of all those Thanksgiving dinner talks you never wanted to have every day of the year.
Yeah, that awkward moment where you realize you're diametrically opposed to everything your uncle stands for. And yes, we are going to have this conversation right now.
Yep.
I mentioned earlier that there's a Chinese version of Windows 10. It's Chinese government version of Windows 10.
That's correct.
Or would they force people, you know, average Joes to buy it as well? Or
no, I think this is literally for the government.
It's a federal. Well, they do a federal version for the U.S. government too, I'm sure, right?
Well, this one's unique. I mean, yeah, what do you think? I mean, Brad and I were talked about this earlier. And I wonder if other governments will now demand this.
What's different?
Maybe, but I think China's unique because A, it's basically a totalitarian government that in unique in the planet is allowing its citizens to run in around in a sort of capitalist world. And yet they require great controls over the internet and of course want control over their own data, which is what this is really about. In other words, the updates for the operating system from the company from the United States, you know, can't be directed in that way toward our computers.
I don't blame them. Would you? I wish
we
could
do that. It makes sense.
No, it makes complete sense for them. I mean, and you got to remember too, you can't just go into China and start a company or work with it. So Microsoft's working with a not a third party. I mean, it's a joint venture, just like you have to do in any other place. And what they're allowing them to do is actually change the encryption as well and manage the security updates and manage the telemetry. You can actually remove OneDrive as well. And so if you're a country like Germany or France and you're looking at this and saying, hey, look, they can change the encryption. That's all that we need. You have to think that these countries are going to be going to Microsoft saying, hey, why can't we do this as well? Even if it is a standard and all that good stuff, who wouldn't want to be in control of their own encryption at that point?
That's a fair point. You know, Microsoft's very pragmatic, and the reason they have, 40 data center regions now, or whatever the number is because so many countries demand and require by law that the data stored for citizens of that country, and of course, you know, governments would be even more important in some ways, be kept in that country, right? And so, you know, Microsoft at great expense, because they really want this business, has made that happen, way more so than, say, either Amazon or Google. Although I expect that to change over time too. So
I would really expect that too.
Yeah, the governmental version of Windows 10 could be designed specifically to allow any government to slip in their own encryption and ensure that their data is never being, you know, compromised by.
I think that's completely reasonable.
Outside encryption, yeah, no, I think
it's
we
nothing
would
crazy.
We do the same with a Chinese operating system, wouldn't we?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's sure. I mean, I talked to the guys from Lenovo earlier this year, and they were talking about their clean PC stuff. And the truth is this company has a rich history of working to ensure that their PCs are clear of crapware and are, you know, are set up very cleanly. They worked with Microsoft way back in the Windows 7 days before there was a signature PC on something called the Velocity program. On and on it goes. But I said, but of course they had Snapfish, you know. And I said, well, you realize you guys have one major problem you're never going to overcome. And they said, well, what's that? I said, you're owned by a Chinese company. You know, I mean, to a certain segment of the population, it's the Google problem. Right. We'll always see you as this thing, you know. And unfortunately, you know, your parent company is Chinese. And there's fears of government ties. There's fears of chip level spying occurring and all kinds of other stuff. And you make great products. And I agree with you. They're super clean. And they're great. But there's going to be this little segment over in the corner. They're not, you know, they got their fingers in their ears. They're not listening to this.
Well, it's just like Opera now, too. They got bought by a Chinese company. It's like, are you really going to use their browser now, knowing you know, what you can
or
do in a browser?
Kaspersky antivirus is Russian.
Well, but there's a difference. So, in other words, there's a difference between an average citizen on the street, whether in China or in the U.S., versus a government agency. If, you know, if you're the CIA, I could pretty much be sure you're not using standard Windows on your PC.
I don't know. That's interesting. I don't know.
Well, I bet not. Well, maybe they'll lock them down. I mean, that Microsoft, to their credit, does give companies a lot of power in locking down Windows.
When the NSA or the CIA comes calling, you probably do what they want.
Yeah.
We're going to find out they're using Chromebooks, and we're going to be like, hey.
So just I knew to be it. Clear, this version is for the Chinese government purchasing.
That's right.
Correct.
If you were a citizen in China, you still could buy a Windows PC with stock Windows on it, right?
I would imagine so.
We don't know. Yeah.
No, you can. I mean, you absolutely can.
So
but
that's not. Remember, I think a lot of people are conflating the two. They're saying, oh, yeah, the Chinese government has a special version of Windows that can spy on their citizens. That's not what this is.
No, this is not going to citizens. No. That's not what it is. Yeah. The thing people may not realize is that this thing dates back to 2011, 2012, when Microsoft was coming out with Windows 8. And the Chinese government said, we are never rolling this thing out. There's too much. You know, this was the start of the online services integration stuff that we also see in Windows 10. And they were just, no, we were not doing this. And then Windows 10 came out and they said, yeah, we're not doing this either. You know, and so Microsoft has been working for the past couple of years to get them to change their mind. And the way you do that is you bend over backwards to, you know, meet their requirements. And like you said, those requirements are actually pretty legitimate. I mean, they're reasonable, you know.
Right. It's not like they removed the start button or anything like that and have to put that back for them.
No, it's not like they asked them to take out the media player and something stupid like that.
So I can tell you one thing that I'm going to do right away when I get my Lenovo X1 Yoga on Friday is install the Linux subsystem for Windows. I'm sorry, yeah. Paul. First thing I do. Won't be doing that
on the... Thank you for saying that while I was drinking, by the way.
I tried to time it that way.
Yep.
One thing I won't be able to do is install Linux subsystem for Windows on my new laptop, my Surface laptop, right? Because that's 10S.
Unless you update, but yeah.
And I, you know what? I'm going to use 10S for a while just to get that experience. See,
it's going to be an exercise in frustration is what it's going to be, and then eventually you're going to cave. But you haven't told
things. I'll December. Miss Chrome. I'll miss Bing. I mean, I won't Bing? Miss Bing. Unfortunately.
I've never heard anyone say that, Leo.
I won't be missing Bing. I'll be missing Google. But I don't know how much else I'll miss. I don't know. It's hard to say. That's why I want to try.
Chrome is the linchpin here for a lot of people. I mean, I've been thinking about it myself. Paul and I, we've talked about this. The one thing I need is Adobe Premiere or Premiere Elements. They already have Photoshop Elements in the store. If they get that in there, it's already got iTunes, which I don't really need. But that's kind of the big thing that I need, like absolutely at the end of the day, have to have. Right. You can use Edge. You know, you might grit your teeth a little bit, but it's not terrible.
No,
but it's not the
best. Because I can put LastPass and UBlock Origin.
I don't know.
It supports plugins.
So. I've tried this so many times, and it starts off like so many relationships, so full of hope. And it just kind of goes south, you know? And I think Windows 10S is kind of a broader version of the problem with Microsoft Edge, was that from a broad stroke, it's fine. But then it's the little things. It doesn't do that. Oh, yeah, it doesn't do that either. Oh, and then you hit 5 or 10 or 12 of these things, whatever the number is, right. And you finally say, you know, screw this. I can't do it.
Yeah, but you're a power user.
That's fair.
Dizzy, Leo. I don't
know. Right.
He only uses one monitor. I'm just going to throw that out there. So that's strike one.
I do, but it's like it's
gigantic.
18 feet
this
wide.
This is the new thinking, by the way, Brad. You're way out of date on this. That since we only could do one thing at a time, what do we need more than one monitor for?
He looks like a day trader down there. He's got like it's like the Wolverine guy in that stupid movie about hackers.
Turn your camera around, Brad. I want to see your setup. Can you do that? Is it detached?
Yeah, it's attached. Oh, I've just got two. I've got four monitors in here, but one's a TV on the wall, one's on the background for podcasting.
If I and then I just use my monitors, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and that's only the left half. 7, 8, and I've got two laptops.
To be fair, you are sitting in a studio.
Well,
I mean, this is
many of those monitors are you know, running ESPN, but other than that, wait a minute, I forgot. 9, 10, 11, 12. Right. I have a lot.
I just run two 4K monitors, though. I mean, two 27-inch 4Ks
that's nice.
Is what.
That's plenty.
Yeah,
I have three at home. But you
it's
know,
nothing crazy.
What I do is I keep messaging running in one all the different because nobody wants. Some people use Telegram. Some use HipChat. Some use Messenger from my Windows sometimes. So I got all these Messenger windows open, and then on the left I have my I have a terminal window and I have my chat room. And the middle is where I'm doing the work. These are kind of like background processes.
Yeah, I've got TweetDeck and Skype open in one, exactly. And then I've got what I'm working on right in front of me.
Yeah, I keep TweetDeck running too. I forgot that. Yeah. My calendar's always open there. And stuff like that. But that's not what you're going to be doing with Windows Laptop. With Windows Laptop, Surface Laptop, you're just going to be. What are you going to be doing? You're going to be binging.
You're going to be binging it.
Binging it.
No. Don't get confused. You still can go to google.com. I know someone's going to hear us talking about this. Be like, oh my God, you can't use Gmail? No, you absolutely can. It's just the defaults are going to be set to Microsoft stuff. No big
search
surprise
is Bing
there.
If you just type in the address bar.
That's right.
Yep.
And this is all a good experiment because you can upgrade to Windows 10 Home free until
Pro.
The end of the year.
Yep.
Pro. Yeah,
that's
until
right.
the end of the year.
Yep.
Nice.
Yep. I've got this theory that they're going to
we're
going to
have a little
home.
Contest. What's that?
I think I honestly think they're going to phase out Home at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
Windows 10S will become Windows, just Home. Windows.
Yeah. I agree.
And there'll be no Windows Home anymore.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. There's a nice superset thing going on there that makes sense. It's.
And if you have assistive needs, I like this, you can upgrade.
Yeah, and that's in keeping with the free upgrade to Windows 10 as well. So if you're on a Windows 7 or Windows 8 user with assistive needs, you can still and will always be able to get the Windows 10 upgrade for free. Nice.
We don't normally cover Google on the show, but Paul seems to want to talk a little bit about Google I/O. That was a week ago, Wednesday.
Well, you know, and we'll probably be talking about this stuff again in a couple of weeks after Apple does their thing because Microsoft and Google had their two developer shows right back to back, and it made it easier to kind of compare them because they happened right on top of each other. And I thought it was really interesting. Like, they both had a really big AI focus, which makes tons of sense for these companies. But I have a lot of examples of things that are essentially kind of end user features where the stuff that Microsoft showed up was actually really interesting, but it was ultimately disappointing because they didn't really release anything that looked anything like what they showed off. Whereas I look at the Google stuff, and a lot of people, it was interesting to me, described the Google show as being kind of boring, you know. Whereas I thought, you know, these guys announce things that are happening that are clearly real. And have huge real world benefits, you know. So, for example, Photos is kind of a goofy example because the Photos solutions that Microsoft and Google have literally zero to do with developers. But some major new features for Photos on the Google side that make it easy to do things that I actually really want to do, like automatically share my photo collection with my wife, which of course is actually a big need. Whereas on the Microsoft side, they showed off like an AR video where someone was kicking a flaming ball of fire at a dragon or something. And it's like I just have a hard time imagining that, you know, the typical soccer mom or whoever, normal human being, is going to be doing that kind of thing. And they're both working on serious computer science problems. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But I just feel like the Google stuff across the board was just a lot more real world and a lot further along. The advances they made to Assistant and to Home, these two products that are already in market compared to like Cortana, which is available on devices that don't have a lot of engagement and are not available in appliance form, although that's coming eventually, you know. I just increasingly am nervous that Microsoft is always kind of a step behind on the consumer stuff, and I'm not sure that they're ever going to be able to catch up.
I know I've told this to Paul, but I'll have a post. I think I'll go out tomorrow. That I honestly think we are approaching what I'm just going to start referring to as the Great Reset. Right now, Microsoft has a lot of legacy applications. They've got Windows Server. They've got all this kind of heritage in this world. But the next big computing horizon is artificial intelligence. And one day, we're going to sit down and think, holy crap, everything's changed. The computer can do everything. It can write its own code. It can fix itself. And we have generally available and broadly available AI. And at that point, imagine if a computer can sit down and write a database structure like SQL or Mongo or something like that. At that point, then it's who has the best AI is going to have the best database structure, is going to have the enterprise money. And if Microsoft doesn't get their butt in gear and make sure that they are on that leading edge of when that starts to happen, because a computer is going to write a code more efficiently than a human. I firmly believe we'll eventually get to that point. And Google is doing some really interesting things about how they're going to learn to get to that point. And while Microsoft, I know they're investing extensively in that area, but whoever gets there first, whether it be Google, it could be Amazon, it could be Facebook, it could be IBM, whoever gets there first is going to reap serious benefits. And it's going to be a great reset of the infrastructure of computing. And companies are going to get left out of that.
The company that's dispassionate about the human element is the one that's going to win, because Microsoft's over there in the corner saying that AI is not going to replace humans, it's going to augment humans. And it's like, really? So let me know what happens when these space robots come down and destroy your campus, because basically that's a really respectful view and it sounds good. But the truth is, it's what you're saying. You know, there was a semi-related article in the New York Times from Thomas Friedman today talking about the future of U.S. manufacturing and how 3D printing is going to kind of democratize that and actually bring manufacturing back to the United States in a really interesting way. And that's kind of the same thing. It's like this forward-leaning, problem-solving approach to something that's a real need, and you can see it happening. Like it makes total sense. And Microsoft is showing a flaming soccer ball getting kicked into a net. And I'm like, I don't understand why everyone's getting so excited about this. This is fluff, you know? And you can look at individual things, like I mentioned Cortana and the lack of devices. Google Lens, which is a way to visualize search using AI with your device, genius. The photo stuff, you know, the family features they didn't actually announce at the show, but, you know, here we are waiting for Microsoft to come up with a Groove, you know, Family Pass. It's never going to happen. And Google's adding Family Pass to everything they make for free.
It's nice. I have six people for all of my stuff.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. So I agree with you. It was very, you know, a lot of it felt boring because everything Google's doing is just kind of incremental.
Sure.
Like the frog in boiling water, you're slowly getting. So we got a new TV. It's got Google Cast built in, as most new TVs do. My Google Home, I can now say to my Google Home, put Netflix up on the TV. Put my calendar. I'm going to be able to do this.
Yeah, it's compatible with everything all of a sudden. You know?
This is kind of more in competition with Amazon's show, which is a screen with its Amazon Echo. But they say, we're not going to put a screen on the Google Home because you've got plenty of screens in the house.
Yep. And then you're like, bingo. And you just made that Amazon thing look as stupid as it really is. No, I mean, it's amazing. And by the way, this is so amazing. I already told Brad this, but I actually had my wife watch part of the keynote. And it was that part. It was the Google Home part and the Google Photos part. She was like, this is, you know, she was blown away by it. And I said, look, I know this, it's going to seem boring and goofy. Give it a second because this is really exciting stuff. You know, we had bought a Google Home last fall and returned it like we did with the Echo because it just wasn't there yet. And if you look at the intervening 6 months or whatever that is, that thing has improved almost exponentially with new skills that they call actions. But and then they announced all that stuff. They just announced multiple users with voice activation of everything. And it's just obviously this is Microsoft made a big show last year or 2 years ago, whenever it was, about how they missed the wave of mobile computing and they were going to catch the next wave. Well, the next wave is happening right now, and it's that thing Brad was talking about. It's AI-based ambient computing.
Yep.
And that is happening right now.
Yep.
Right now, Amazon's winning it, which is really goofy, but I think we can all agree Google either will win or will be a major player in this market. And there's not a lot of room for other players there. Apple has a built-in market of hundreds of millions of people who love Apple stuff, so Siri will always have that place. But Apple also respects privacy too much. They're a little too cute about it. And they're never going to be able to have the advanced features that Google's going to do because they just refuse to go in that direction.
So I don't use Cortana enough to really know. Is Cortana close? If you made a hardware device, which you know apparently what? People so, are going to do, could is Cortana
Right, so this
there?
Stuff is finally going to happen this holiday season, right? Some of them will have screens, I hope. We don't know anything about that. But what we're seeing is this holiday season, 1 year after Google Home, 3 years after Alexa and the Amazon Echo, Microsoft's partners, because this is how they do things because they're so goofy, are going to come out with something, you know? It's sort of like the Windows Mixed Reality platform, which is just VR. They're trying to make it sound like it's sort of HoloLens, and it's not. It's just VR tethered to a computer, which is exactly the way nobody does anything ever. And I just, it's hard for me to not freak out because this stuff is late to market and is not what anyone wants or needs.
Well, it's not only going to be late based on the rumors, which I completely believe, Apple's going to have their Siri device out this fall. Same holiday shopping season. If you go to the store and you see, oh, look, here's one that works with FaceTime. Here's one that works with Cortana. Which device do I carry in my pocket?
Well, the phone calling features of all these things that we're presuming on the Apple end, but I'm sure you're right. And we know what Google Home is going to offer, which is incredible, and how it can map to your actual phone number so that when you call someone using your voice as you walk around your house, that person will see your name and number on the caller ID and know that it's you. I'm sorry, that wins. We can argue all you want about privacy and Google versus Microsoft, but that wins. Microsoft can't even figure out a way to do SMS relay on a PC from a phone. They're still struggling with that. And Google is already doing this whole house phone feature thing. You know, they're in completely different places. And it's very frustrating to me because there are super smart people at Microsoft working on this stuff. The technology sound, they're one of the few companies that has the science and the capability to do this AI machine learning stuff.
No, you can't turn. You can pay money and buy programmers and do all the science, but you got to have the data. You got to have the giant, the massive data sets.
Yes, and by the way, that's why missing mobile hurts so much.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't – one of the keys when you make a technology transition is you have to be able to bring people along with you. You know, the benefit of the PC was that you can leverage it to get people into Office, to get people onto server, and now you can get them into the Microsoft Cloud. That all works. It's a giant transition. It's beautiful. But you lost it on the client side because they never had a – mobile client that went anywhere. So all of a sudden there's a hard stop and we're stuck with PCs and that's it. Google and Apple can leverage billions of mobile devices to get people to go to the next thing that they're doing. And Microsoft just lost that. It's never coming back. They're never going to recover from it. And they're already missing this first ambient computing wave. They already have. It's already over. And mixed reality is not it. And it's just... The PC is great. Windows 10 is great on PCs, but it's a very limited market.
Look what Google's doing. They just announced yesterday at their ad conference, they're going to let people who buy ads understand whether that ad triggered a brick and mortar sale.
Well,
how do you do that? By having Android Pay, having phones.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have those technologies out in the world. Yep. And suddenly, and the problem is that undermines, you know, if you're going to buy an ad, who are you going to buy an ad from? Somebody could tell you whether that made – because that's one of the big problems advertisers have. And it's one of the big problems we have. I do an ad for Upside. I don't know if you used our code or not. I don't know if you went there. If I do an ad for something you could buy in the store.
Sure.
And you go buy it in the store. Well, that should really benefit. That's from my ad, but nobody knows that until now.
Right.
Now,
right.
Of course, that's going to – privacy advocates are going, what? Sure. Google's very, you know, says, no, we have super good anonymizing technology and there'll be no way people will be able to connect to people, but we will be able to tell an advertiser. Yeah, that because of that ad, banner ad, 43% bought in the store.
Google is Microsoft's worst nightmare. They really are.
Well, they're out of the ad business, right? Overture or whatever. I mean, Bing. That was a Yahoo deal. I don't remember how that...
Yeah, well, I guess what I mean by that is just that this is a company that essentially has unlimited money from advertising and they can do anything they want with it. And the thing they've decided to do with it is go after Microsoft. You know?
Well,
and
it's everybody.
Well, not exclusively, but I mean...
Everybody.
No, but I mean, it's very interesting. I had someone who emailed me last week and kind of complained about this. And it's like, why doesn't everybody hate Google? All they're doing is just copying Microsoft and attacking Microsoft's markets and everything. And I was like, do you remember what Microsoft was like in the 1990s? I'm curious
because it's
very probable that no company has ever killed more companies than Microsoft, right? I mean,
yep.
You leverage your market power. That's what you do.
Yeah.
I mean, what Microsoft is doing, given the cards they've been dealt, is smart. The client stuff they're doing with phone integration is really smart, but you face kind of an ambivalent audience there, unfortunately. The future of this company is this productivity / AI / machine learning / cloud services stuff, and they're going to be great at it. And it's going to become a little more removed from the day-to-day tech enthusiast stuff that we're so used to. And that's hard because that's the stuff I care about, you know, the client systems and the software and the stuff that people interact with every day. And, you know, Apple kind of hits that stuff out of the park for their audience. And Google, frankly, is kind of hitting it out of the park as well these days.
You know, because I'm going to the Galapagos in a couple of weeks, I'm thinking a lot about evolution and niches and survival of the fittest.
Yep, I can see why.
Yeah, that's where Darwin came up with the origin of species. But really, that's in a way, that's what's going on with Microsoft and all these companies. The niches have changed. And if you're going to survive, you have to change your survival strategy because Microsoft's job now is, I think, to be clear-eyed and say, look, we're never going to have the data corpus that Google has. We can't go head-to-head with them there. We have to find a niche that we can succeed in for survival, right?
Right. Yeah. That's exactly right. And it's funny, coincidentally today, I clicked on a story that Microsoft had about some Xbox thing that they're doing. And at the top of the article, the blog post, there was a video and you click the play button. And of course, what loads is an embedded YouTube player. And what flashed through my mind was, Not that long ago, Microsoft went through a series of their own online video services. Remember, they had MSN video at a time. You could post your own videos to it and all this stuff. They tried to kind of compete with that stuff. And, you know, at some point, you just have to realize, like, this is the way the world is going. Google is providing this for free. Why wouldn't we just use it? Even Microsoft uses it. I mean, they don't even try to have their own thing. They just use YouTube because that's what everyone uses, you know. I appreciate the fact that they're pragmatic about this stuff. You know, I feel like they don't have much of a choice.
Yeah.
Which is the real
issue.
You got
to be clear-eyed. You can't think in the past, and you can't have regrets. You just have to say, where do we move forward? I think Satya Nadella is very good at that. That would be my sense.
Yes. You know? Oh, yeah, yeah, yes. I don't think this would happen.
Ballmer was not so good at that.
Well, it's not his fault. No. I mean, speaking of evolution. Yeah, he had his foot in the past. He came up in the world where Microsoft came to great power through their strategy at the time, which was Windows, Windows, Windows. Microsoft, there are many, many stories about the many projects they killed because it maybe someday would compete with Windows, so we're not doing that. It's hard to divorce yourself from that, right? I mean, he became as successful. He owns the Clippers because he was successful doing that stuff.
Yeah, that
you know, he became rich.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to walk away from the thing that makes you rich.
That's right. That's why Apple, I believe, is struggling right now, to be honest.
I think it's important to point out that this isn't all doom and gloom for Microsoft. They very much do have a future. It's just in the future that Paul doesn't really care about. Like, I love their enterprise stuff right now.
No, he's right.
I agree. I'm not enterprise.
Their Azure is not going anywhere. I mean, you think about the cost and footprint it takes to build up a service that competes with Azure, AWS, and Google to some extent. I mean, that's billions of... A startup is not going to come and say, we're going to build 10 data centers because that's at least $10 billion just to build out the infrastructure before you're selling. Like, they are going to be around.
They are the only companies who are going to do this. Yep.
Yeah, that's they're going to be around for a very long time, but it's going to morph and evolve to the theme of the minute, where what type of company they are. I don't want to quite say they're going to be an IBM of the world, but their consumer-facing focus where they're not making much money isn't going to be around. I mean, it's going to be around as an offshoot of what they can sell to a business.
They are an IBM, right? And that's not an insult. It's just like Leo was saying, this is a natural evolution. And this is me talking myself into how okay this is, because for me, this is not okay. But, and it's, you know, it's why we joke about the Linux thing on Windows. To me, this is like another indication of how things are changing in ways that I don't like. because the thing that was so good about it in the past is not good about it.
You're not into the B2B thing, and neither am I.
No.
You know. But
that's
to paraphrase the great Kenny Rogers, you got to know when to hold them, and you got to know when to fold them, right?
Remember, IBM essentially invented the PC industry as we know it, and they sold off their PC business.
Yep.
You know,
buying a ThinkPad. Is it made by IBM? No.
Made by a Chinese company. Saying to someone in the 80s, by the way, Korean cars are going to be a thing. Oh, and wait, hold on to your hats. They're going to be really good, too. You know, right. It doesn't seem possible.
Oh, and Sony, they're almost out of the business.
Yeah, they're gone.
Yeah.
You know the kings of consumer electronics?
You know that lucky gold star you see in the back of that drugstore right there? That's going to be a big powerhouse.
Sure. Remember the cute little dog with the turnstile thing? Yeah, he's going to be gone too. He's gone away. He's going to be put to sleep.
No more RCA.
Yeah.
He's listening.
No, things change.
No one's talking.
They do.
Xbox, let's get some good Xbox news here. This is a billion-dollar business.
Oh, is it?
makes a lot of money. They got what, over 50 million Xbox Live subscribers.
It
makes a lot of money, but I don't know if it is a billion-dollar business.
That's a good question.
I'm playing Injustice 2. Have you tried Injustice 2? It's so much fun.
You've heard the phrase, obviously, follow the money. Yeah. Microsoft has made it impossible to follow the money. And when they do that, you should be right to doubt about the relative success of a business. But anyway, so just two items of interest to Xbox fans. There are three Xbox S bundles that are $50 off. I believe they're all 1 terabyte bundles. It seems like there's a sale on Xbox One basically every week, but this is this week's sale. So if you don't have an Xbox One S.
Well, you're going to see more of that, right, as we get closer and closer to the next generation.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And then also, I've been told by a couple of people this capability has actually existed for a little while, but they announced this week that Amazon Video can now stream in 4K on Xbox One S. Ooh, it's not the only place you can stream in 4K, but Xbox One S is one of the places that offers it. They also have HDR capabilities, which is fantastic.
Oh, good.
So it's, yeah, 4K. UHD.
I play my UHD HDR Blu-rays on it. Mm-hmm. And that's a Planet Earth 2, BBC's new Planet Earth.
Oh, we use
right off the Xbox to my my LG OLED TV, and it looks so good. Oh,
what's the Australian sci-fi post-apocalyptic thing? Road Warrior.
Oh, Mad Max. It's great. Thunder Road. It's kind of a muted palette. It's all very deserty, sandy, but boy, does that look good. Yeah, I have that one.
It's an incredible. Yeah, it's a nice demo reel.
Oh my god,
for that kind of thing.
But Paul, if you have a 4K TV and a 4K player, get Planet Earth 2. You got
Planet Earth 2. Okay,
you will be there. You're there.
Just leave it on. Yeah, just leave it on.
Just let it run. It was that. I remember when 1080p HD came out.
Yep.
That was the first.
Yeah.
It was like you could see every hair on the caterpillar's leg.
Yeah. Now the caterpillar's
hair
on
the hair on the
It's amazing. Amazing.
You have to wonder though, like if it's ever going to get better than this. It seems like we've kind of hit the.
Oh no! Like we got 8K. 8K's coming.
Yeah.
Although, we got 3D TV too. Don't forget about that.
Please, can we forget about that?
It's going to be everywhere and everything.
You know, I have a Samsung, it's a Panasonic, and I have two pairs of 3D glasses with that TV that have never been worn. Maybe once the first day, never again. Never been worn.
Mm-hmm. So
and they're sitting there charging. Things. They've been charging for years.
Does the resolution suffer because of 3D?
Yes.
Is that what happens?
Yeah. In a way that you can thank 3D for the quick transition to 4K, because essentially you had to build 4K monitors with dual 1080p screens, right?
Gotcha.
And this is the problem with VR as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Where you're splitting the
display. But the problem with VR is you're 3 inches away from the screen.
So. Yes. Well, if you enjoyed YouTube videos back when they were 320p, you're going to love VR. You're looking for a little nostalgia. Yeah.
Actually,
the sand looks so grainy.
That's not sand. That's a beach.
After a little time in VR, 4K UHD, it's like hurts your eyes. It's like, wow, that's sharp.
Yeah.
That's too sharp.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of broached this subject earlier, Paul, and I like it.
Yeah.
It's a little philosophical conversation. We've got some time to talk about
it. Oh, yeah. Everyone's going to disagree about this, but I'll just throw this one out because I saw a story in Recode about how Apple was redoing the way they do in-store edutainment or whatever, and then Apple eventually announced it. And I thought, you know, Apple's retail stores have kind of gone from this joke in the beginning, everyone thought that was going to fail, to being what I would say may be their biggest advantage, you know, in the sense that if you buy obviously iPhones are popular and they bring on all the money. That's not exactly what I mean, but they have almost 500 of these stores nationwide, in the world. If you've ever walked into one, they're often full of people.
Yeah, jammed.
Granted, they're in there fixing iPhones and stuff. But you know, in the same way that, you know, Whole Foods, you go through the checkout aisle and they have these kind of high-priced impulse buy things. You know, Apple sells $3,000 impulse buys. I mean, this is the ultimate impulse buy. And and they can leverage this in many ways. One is just the fact that you get to go to a place. Like if something does go wrong with your iPhone, they can fix it often while you're standing there. I mean, that's huge. It's huge. And so it kind of made me think, well, what might be, if you had to think Microsoft is an obvious example. Like what's Microsoft's biggest advantage? Like if what's the one thing they have that no one else can duplicate?
Yeah.
What?
In my opinion, it is that they are the only company that can bring enterprises to cloud computing because they don't have to do a full stop. Microsoft has all the on-prem stuff that they already trust.
Right.
They have hybrid solutions that bridge the cloud and on-prem, and then they have the full cloud. And Microsoft is making this transition with them. And so this is the company that those enterprises do already trust. And they're the only company that can bring them forward into the future. It doesn't mean that there won't be some defections. Obviously, some companies are going to go Google or whatever. A lot of companies use AWS for different things. But they're the only one that offers the whole thing.
Right.
It's unique. Exactly. It's unique to them.
And I thought you were going to say the lack of lines at the Microsoft store.
Oh, yikes. No, I would say that if we're going to talk biggest disadvantages, in fact, I think I did write this. How did I word it? Microsoft has never understood consumers and is never considered cool, right? Which
that's,
kind of falls.
You know, that is the weird, and I feel bad for them, but that's exactly right. They're just not cool.
Yeah. They don't get it, yeah.
But, I mean, I'm sure they want to be cool.
Yep.
They're trying.
So the other one that I thought was actually rather obvious and is kind of cool as well, or is kind of cool in this case, is Amazon. And Amazon has this unique thing where they're the world's biggest retailer, and yet for some reason they want to get into technology, and they sell hardware devices, they sell software services, and they're the only company that can mix and match benefits that are both physical and digital. And so if you get an Amazon Prime subscription, which a lot of people, especially in the United States, probably Western Europe, want and have, $100 a year, you get access to this incredible list of services. It's like Prime Video, Prime Music, Prime Photos, Kindle Owner's Lended Library, Prime Reading, Kindle First, Audible Channels, Amazon Music Unlimited, video add-on subscriptions, Twitch Prime. It kind of goes on and on and on. This stuff, you just get it for free. Now, I don't actually use any of it, and most of it, I should say.
I use Amazon Prime Video a lot because it's free movies.
I use that and their music.
And photo storage, but it's kind of like the second backup after Google.
Right, but that's fine, right? It's just it's a perk. I mean, it's just kind of a neat
perk. It didn't cost me anything. All I really want is two-day shipping.
It's the same benefit as Office 365 where you just keep getting additional stuff for paying the same fee. But in this case, some of the stuff you get, you know, you're paying a fee basically to get these digital offerings. I'm sorry, physical deliveries. But you get all these digital offerings for free.
Yeah.
As part of it's cool. It's unique. Like Apple can't do it. Microsoft can't do it. Mm-hmm. They're the only company that can do that.
That's a good point.
The one thing I love about Amazon, and this cracks me up all the time from like a business perspective, they looked at it and said, you know what, we're in a retail business, you know, they're online goods. And they said, what market has lower margins than retail? Oh, hardware. Yep. And so then they went into hardware.
yep.
and lost their shirt on the Fire Phone. And
phone.
By the way, Dedham is interesting for any number of reasons, but there's an Apple store in Dedham, which is messed up. I could actually walk there from my house, which is bizarre. But now there's also an Amazon retail store in this same mall.
Interesting.
So my daughter went there.
That I don't get. What is that all about?
Oh, wait till you – if you don't think you get it yet, wait till you hear this story. So she went to buy a book. Now, my daughter's 15 years old, so obviously she was paying in cash. They don't accept cash at the Amazon store. You have to use a credit card, which she does not have because she's a child.
They don't
– Now, I don't understand the legality of this. It seems to me that you should not be allowed to operate a retail store that doesn't accept cash, but they don't accept cash. And the retail, my daughter credit because she mocked this guy for doing this. But he actually said to her, he said, well, we don't accept cash at Amazon.com either, so it actually makes sense.
Yeah. But does that explain why they're doing a store? I still don't understand why they're doing brick and mortar.
So you know
they
how
killed all the other ones.
Yeah, right. There's nothing left.
You've heard the term teabagging, I assume, right? This notion that you're in a this is them teabagging retail. In other words, we've driven you all out of business, and now we're going to take
rent's
over
cheap.
The.
Why not?
Yeah, the rent's cheap. Exactly. No, I mean, how terrible is that? Yep.
Wow, it's weird they don't accept cash. I guess they probably don't have a cash register.
Right. It's one less thing they don't have to deal with because that probably brings in overhead.
I'm sorry, but I can't take this dirty piece of paper. Where would I put it?
I know.
Yeah. Plus, you know, you always have to worry about employees skimming. Mm-hmm. You got to, you know, go to the bank.
Got to have a cash register, like an actual place to store it.
It's almost like you have to be a retail store. I see what you're saying, but that's what those businesses do.
Yeah, not for
even
long.
Apple will take cash.
Yeah. Really?
It's crazy.
I've never tried to pay for anything because who has that much money?
Sure.
in cash.
Well, you bring in the suitcase. You know, you walk in there and say, right. "I'll have a 4-year-old Mac Pro, please."
Yeah.
Nevertheless, I mean, I guess it's data. I guess if you really want to get to the bottom line of why Amazon has brick and mortar stores, it's about some sort of data. But
they have a distribution network, right? There's also a distribution center. I think it's in Dedham, but if it's not, it's right on the edge of Dedham where, you know, the trucks go roaring out of there every morning and they go out to the little local. They've built quite a little physical network.
Those
it's kind
lockers,
of like a.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a big infrastructure going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I almost feel like it's like, you know, we've met the enemy in 10 years.
And it is our desire to buy everything and have it in 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. The one thing I absolutely love about Amazon is they are building their global airline distribution center here out of Cincinnati. They're dumping like $1.5 billion.
Right. Used to be Louisville, and for FedEx. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, and so they're doing it right out of since the airport here. And I have a friend who works at Amazon. He's like, you realize that once all these global planes start landing here, you're going to be able to get, like, anything in 2 hours. Like,
You luck out. I have to say, Amazon has a problem. This is completely off topic.
No, it's
But the big problem Amazon has is the vast number of non-Amazon sellers on the Amazon site. And I have been bitten now several times.
Yes.
Buying something I thought was coming from Amazon. And
you know
what
they need? You're going to like this one. They need Amazon.com S. And what that is a
just
version
Amazon.
Of the Amazon site.
Just
where it's only directly sold by Amazon.
Yeah. I would use that.
Yep. I would too.
Because it pisses me off, you know. I've been collecting fidget spinners for enough reasons I don't really understand. And almost none of these come from Amazon, right? I got a package the other day with Chinese on it. It came from China.
Yeah. Yep.
And last night I was ordering camera memory for, you know, my trip. And you have to be very careful because you can order something and it's going to be, Amazon Prime, except it's not. It's 4 to 5 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, that's exactly right. And I've gotten things like that where I didn't know what it was. You mentioned China. I got something from Hong Kong, and you get this weird little envelope with Asian characters all over it.
Customs like, what, declaration.
It's what is this thing?
Yeah.
And it was the laptop sleeve or the phone, whatever I ordered, 6 months ago.
And it's not merely a matter of paying attention. I mean, you can decipher it, but they don't make it easy.
Because
you can be looking at a Prime listing.
Yes.
And accidentally order it from somebody else.
You choose the black one.
Right.
And the black one isn't sold by the same seller.
Yes. Precisely.
Yep.
You want 256 gigs? Yeah. No.
They make
we're going to have to ship that from Borneo.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly how that happens. Yep. And this is the problem with the frictionless buying experience. You know, you are lulled into this. Plus, let's face it. We all have really good experiences with Amazon. They're great about basically everything.
Yeah.
So you get lulled into a sense of security or whatever, you don't even think about it.
We bought a toilet. That was a mistake, by the way. We bought one of them Japanese toilets from, it turned out, not Amazon, but some guy in Florida.
Right.
And it came cracked. Because
that's where you buy your Japanese toilets.
Because that's where all the Japanese toilets come. And it was cracked. It was broken.
Ironically, all of their fish goes to Japan.
And we actually had to kind of fight with the guy. But ultimately, because we bought it on Amazon, he had to stand up for it.
He had to respect that.
Of the power of the mighty Bezos.
Yeah.
You don't want Bezos.
No, they're great about taking stuff back. Yeah. I mean, that's always been the thing, you know. Mm-hmm. I happily pay for Prime shipping because I'm an American and I buy stuff. It's terrible. It's like such an awful way to be.
Yeah, but you know what? We're Americans. We get to be awful.
You're supposed to say we're Americans. God damn it.
God damn it.
I want that Japanese toilet today.
I need it now.
If I don't hear that thing silently flushing, heads are going
to
roll.
I'm careful about what I say. I'm American. I deserve a clean butt.
Yeah, sure you do.
Yes.
Sure you do.
Sure you do. Come on in, everybody. It's a party. And while we're going to take a break because the back of the book, thank you, Frederick. The back of the book is coming up. Hello, Glenn.
It's a note. Actually, we don't have to do this advertiser anymore, is what this note says.
It says don't read that. They haven't paid. No, it's actually not the case. It's Glenn Clatworthy's visiting from Alexandria, VA. Hello, Glenn.
Hello.
Our sponsor today is my web host, the company where my blog lives. Very happy to be back on WordPress.com. Actually, this is actually an interesting story because I used to host my own. You know, I would download the software, pay for a server, run it myself, which is fun. And you learn a lot about managing websites, but it's also a lot of work. And I ended up spending more time updating my site than I did actually posting on my site. So I decided to do what Petri did, what Paul Thurrott has done. I went to WordPress.com. They host it. It's the same great WordPress, all the plugins, all the control, all the CSS, all the great templates, but a lot of support from the folks at WordPress.com. They do domain registration. They do a lot of things that makes it very easy. I didn't, you know, because it turned out I didn't want to be a sysadmin. I just wanted to blog. Whatever your business, whether you want to sell, whether you want to just do a publication, so many of the tech publications out there use WordPress. It's very interesting as their CMS, their content management system. Hundreds of templates, including publishing templates, built-in search engine optimization, it's automatic, social sharing, and I love, you know, how easy it is for me to port. I'll show you my site, how easy it is to port my Instagram and my Twitter. I'll go to leolaporte.com and show you what I'm doing here. It's so easy to post, too, and of course, WordPress has the apps on every platform. Plus, WordPress is the API that everybody uses. Actually, one of these pictures has you and Mary Jo. I should refresh my my front page. If you go back, you'll see. But it was so easy to get all this stuff in here in RSS feeds. The APIs are everywhere. So I can very easily get content into and out of my site. Great commenting system that Akismet anti-spam engine is still the best in class. See why 27% of all the websites in the world run on WordPress.com. You should be running your site on WordPress.com. It's awesome! And you're going to love it. Tell you what, I got a special deal for you. If you go to WordPress.com/windows, 15% off your new site. Any new plan purchase, WordPress.com/windows. Let them do the hosting. Let them keep it up to date. And by the way, by being on WordPress, you also get access to this great WordPress community. So if you go to my website, you'll see a button that says following. I have more than 500,000 people now, just out of nowhere, following me, thanks to WordPress. WordPress is awesome. WordPress.com/windows for 15% off your brand new website. And we thank WordPress so much for their support. WordPress.com. Thank you for making a great site for me, WordPress. And I was trying to figure out how I could... We were talking about this earlier, post my travel blog on my blog, and I figured it out thanks to the great community at WordPress. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley's on vacation. She's only here in effigy. It's Paul Thurrott and Brad Sams. Brad Jo Foley. Can we get a pop-up of Mary Jo Foley for the next time Brad's on? That's what we need.
There we go.
Yeah. Let's kick off the back of the book with Paul Thurrott and his tip of the week.
So I have an additional tip that just occurred as you were doing that ad, which is that Microsoft has made the video available of the Surface Pro launch in China.
Oh.
It's on YouTube, of course, nice. Because that's where things are. But if you go to YouTube and search for, I think, Microsoft China event, you should find it. It is on the Microsoft channel on YouTube, of course. So that is available. Speaking of the Surface Pro, as you might expect, Surface Pro 4 is still available and is on sale. And so... not every single model, but I think there are 5 or 6 models, and all but 2 of them are on sale now for $100 to $200 off. The sweet spot is that one you were looking at earlier, which is the 8 gig, 256 gig version. Normally, let's see, where is it? Normally is $1,199. Right now, that can be had for $999. And
nice.
You know, when you think about this device and the new Surface Pro, I mean, this is basically the same device. Obviously, the battery life isn't as good. And you don't take the advantage of that new that one new pen feature. But honestly, for the most part, this is worth having at these prices. And maybe the prices get even better as we move forward into the year. And let's see, I've got a couple of app picks. Duolingo this past week added support for Japanese, which is actually kind of exciting. This is the hardest thing I've ever done, and I'm probably never going to finish it. But I'll just throw it out there if you're trying to learn.
Are you doing Japanese, really?
I'm trying. It's awful. It's so hard. It's just... really hard because look at it.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
You know, it's so unlike a Western right. languages, which right. is the point. Mm. It took them a long time to come up with something that they say works. It's really hard. It makes French look like English.
I'd actually. Like to learn a little Japanese though. I'm going to Japan in the spring. I would.
Yeah, I'd like to learn Chinese as well, and I'm wondering if this isn't going to be the first in a series of Asian languages.
Non-Arabic,
yeah. I've been writing a lot and talking a lot about progressive web apps, and it's interesting to me that both Microsoft and Google at their respective developer events over the past 2 weeks highlighted the same app, which is Twitter Lite, which is mobile.twitter.com. I have been looking for an app to replace MetroTwit for a long, long time. And I actually I'm using this web app because you can save it to the desktop using Chrome. You can save it to your home screen on Android using Chrome as well. And it looks and works like a native app. It's actually really, really nice. It's a great example of how a web app can be, as Microsoft says, native-ish. It's beautiful. You can also do it on an iPhone, by the way, but the problem with that is you have to use Safari. And in the current version of iOS, even though you can save a website to the home screen, it doesn't get rid of the browser Chrome, so it still looks like a web browser window. In Chrome, the actual Chrome red web browser on Windows and on Android, you get this app experience. It's like an app. It doesn't have any of the browser goofiness around it. So At first, I was just kind of experimenting with it, and then I had actually spent a bunch of time looking for other kinds of PWAs to use as apps, graphic editors, text editors, and so forth. And then this thing just kind of fell in my lap, and I've actually been using it ever since. So it's worth checking out. It's actually a neat little
app. I mean, on Android, obviously there is a native Twitter app, but you think even better than the Twitter app if you...
I think they are identical.
It better because it's always up to date. You don't have to update it.
Yep. That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And and on Windows, someone asked me, you know, today on Twitter, you know, why don't you just use the native Windows as a Twitter app on Windows? And the reason is when you install an app to the desktop in Chrome like this, you just have to install Chrome later, and then it's in there. It becomes an app in the Windows Start menu, so you get it automatically. You don't have to go and install things over and over again. And for someone like me, like I have to install Chrome, obviously, but whatever Chrome apps that I've installed are always available, and you can pin them to the start start menu or the taskbar. I use the taskbar. And they're just available. And so I agree that the ability to tie apps to your account and install them all through the store is nice. The ability to install one app and have a bunch of web apps just install automatically for you is actually even better. So,
This is interesting. I mean, it is just like the app. You're right.
Yeah. And both Microsoft and Twitter, Microsoft and Google had pictures of, you know, the native Android app and the web app side by side. They're basically identical. I mean, you wouldn't know the difference. If I handed you a phone that was running this thing, you would, of course, it's an app. And it is an app, but it's a web app.
Wow.
Something to check out.
Wow. All right. Hey, I think that means we're going to give Brad some time to talk.
And before we do give Brad some time, I do want to point out, I'm looking over the stuff that Brad has added to the notes, and I got to tell you, this is exactly what Mary Jo Foley would have done, and I am disgusted by this.
Sorry, Paul. Somebody's got to give a, you know, care about the revenue side of Microsoft, and I enjoy the enterprise side of the world. I mean, I used to work in that side.
Really?
Broken inside.
Yeah, Paul and I do not understand that at all.
Broken.
It's a much...
Broken.
Different and more fun place to be, because when things screw up at that level, it's cataclysmic. Like,
sure, it's the planet scale failure, like the Alderaan explosion. My
favorite joke out of Build was Microsoft came out with a thing called Cosmos DB, which is obviously Cosmos being all encompassing everything. And then they talk about things that are planet scale, but a planet in the world of a cosmos is increasingly smaller every time we think about the cosmos. So they come out with this, hey, here's Cosmos. Oh, we do planet scale stuff, which is very small.
The Commodore 64 app.
Yeah. It's going back to that bird getting shot in the head. Like, Microsoft, you know what? Run your marketing by us. We'll give you some feedback. Like, yep. It all comes back. But the enterprise pick of the week, filling in for Ms. Foley here. I missed this at Build, actually. Microsoft introduced what they are calling low-priority virtual machines, and it can cut your batch processing by up to 80%. And this is actually pretty interesting stuff, and it's exactly like what it sounds like. So regions that have extra capacity, you can now actually buy those virtual machines to do batch processing, like metadata, that kind of stuff, video edit or video compression or scaling or that kind of stuff. Anything that's batch-related that you need to do, you'll save up to 80%, but you're going to only be getting low priority VMs. So what that can mean is that, let's say you're having a batch process run and somebody else has priority over a VM, it can actually take that away from your instance. But if you're willing to give that flexibility up, you can save a bunch of money, and they will dynamically scale these things. So if one region has capacity and another one doesn't, you know, it'll give you that capacity. But again, you're kind of at the mercy of what's high priority. But you can really cut your pricing 80%, which is huge for this type of processing in the cloud, which, I don't know, it's kind of hard to explain on the fly, but for the people who are in this world, they will exactly know what this is, and you can go sign up for that now. It's in public preview, and that's just another way Microsoft is trying to offload some of their extra capacity that they have in these 40 different regions around the world. So
nice. Good deal.
Yeah.
And your code name pick of the week?
Code name pick of the week. So this one's a little interesting because the Surface Pro was kind of referred to as J, and many of us thought it was Jupiter. And we don't know if this is actually a naming mistake, but Time Drifter found on the Microsoft website that the hero image asset for the Surface Pro was actually called Jasper. So is it Jupiter? Is it Jasper? One of those names, I still think it might be Jupiter. We were thinking maybe the Jasper was a naming mistake, but Jupiter or Jasper was the name of the Surface Pro before it launched.
Interesting. So, I like Jasper.
Yeah, it's interesting. And then the beer pick of the week, actually, I drank it last night.
You're going to do one of those, too?
I have to.
Man, for all seasons.
Rheingeist Cougar. Rheingeist Cougar. It's a locally brewed here in Cincinnati. It is a blonde ale.
Cougar is a beer Mary Jo probably would not pick, so that's a good choice.
But it is by far, I think, my favorite beer that is brewed locally. I can drink this any day of the week, and it is delicious.
I used to drink Rheingold. Is this related?
I don't think so. This is what started as a small brewery, and they've kind of grown up. There's a couple of them here in Cincinnati, but these guys have done very well for themselves, along with Mad Tree Brewery.
Goes great with a three-way chili. Have yourself a Cougar. Look at those cans, too. They're wild. I love the can.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
Brad Sams, thank you so much for taking time off from bossing Paul around.
Jesus.
What?
And I think it's more of dealing with Paul. Paul and I have been on the road a lot together lately, and seeing him makes me queasy.
Love the new laptopless travel. You're just going to really enjoy that.
Mm-hmm. We're all going to get iPad Pros.
Yep.
Okay. We're going to get absolutely nothing done.
That reminds me, I probably should bring an iPad with me on the trip, shouldn't I? In case those regulations change before I get home. Paul Thurrott is at, and Brad Sams are at, Thurrott, Thurrott.com. Brad's also at Petri.com. They're all kind of related. And Paul's books are at leanpub.com, including the Field Guide to Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
Now featuring Windows 10S.
Paul, we did get a question. Are you going to write a field guide for Windows 10 China Government Edition?
Yes, but I have to learn Mandarin first.
Yeah. Is that why you're doing Duolingo?
He's Duolingoing it. Write it in Japanese. We'll have it translated.
Yeah, that'll be confusing to everybody.
We do this show every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. If you want to watch live, you can. We're on a YouTube Live, Ustream, Twitch, and, of course, just at our website, twit.tv/live. Once you're there, you might want to join the chat room as well, so you can kind of give us some back talk. That's irc.twit.tv. And you can join us.
Leo.
What?
I just realized I never asked you about your son's graduation.
It was lovely. We wanted to go to Avery in Boulder, and they were having a private party, I'm sorry to say.
Oh, jeez. No, the mothership.
Instead, we went to a place called Black Belly, where I had what they called the Big Boy Bologna Sandwich, which was about this much, about a pound of homemade bologna with mayonnaise and chips on every layer. And I got immediately after that, unrelated to it, but I thought it might be related at the time, got horribly, deathly ill with a norovirus and spent the rest of the time in Boulder shivering. But I did make it to the graduation. No, I got
Sorry.
I know. It was not fun.
But I did get to see my son walk, which is
good.
The goal of everyone.
Congratulations.
Who has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars towards their child's education. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm really proud of him. He's a smart kid. He's done very well. Here's the four of us at and look at the beautiful those beautiful mountains in the back.
Yeah, that's either Boulder, Colorado, or Canton, Massachusetts, where we have the Blue Hills.
Really? They look the same.
No,
those are the Flatirons.
No, they look nothing
not
like
even
that.
not even
close.
Yeah, it was fun. He graduated with a degree in journalism of all things.
Wow,
I thought that was a huge mistake. But
going to tell us,
don't let him near us.
Yeah, no, I'm very proud of him. He's a great kid, and
no, that's great.
Yeah, he's gonna be taking my job.
Sure.
Yep. I'm gonna get a little pop up him. I could just put in there. Dad, you're doing it wrong.
Oh God.
Brad and Paul, thank you so much. Mary Jo will be back next week, and I hope you will too. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.